On the Download, a longtime host of Chicago Tonight Week in Review, Joel Weissman, actor and Lansing, Illinois product, Jim O'Hare, and another installment of the Swap Meet with Greg Flam. Now, here's your host, a man who now owns five pink shirts for the summer, Justin Kaufman.
What can I say? I'm a confident guy. I got five pink shirts. What do you got? You got anyone else got pink shirts? Am I the only one? Get a couple of pink polos, you know, pop the collar, get myself some white shorts, some Jesus sandals, get myself on a horse. A lot of things you can do this summer, you know, to really change up my style. I think that's what I'm going to do, Pete. I'm going to change it up, become more of a preppy. Mm-hmm. Never really was a preppy in my life.
Want to get back into it?
Yeah, like an 80s villain preppy, like a guy who's like, you know,
have a sweater around your
exactly. I gotta get some sweaters. Neck. I gotta have the better boat for the boat race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have a rich dad, that kind of stuff. I got a lot to work on, but I think that could be my look.
That's
for the
it.
Summer.
Preppy. Yeah,
preppy villain.
I think you need boat shoes more than Jesus sandals.
Right.
You need some loafers. Some tasseled loafers, perhaps.
Yep, nailed it. Right. I want to be the guy who. I forgot his name, who is the boyfriend in Goonies, who's, I forget, it's Chad, something like that, who's always messing with the Goonies, you know, and he's like, Mar, what are you doing out there? He yells down the well, you know, and he grabs the bike, you know, and he takes off in the car. I want to be that guy for once in my life.
You can do it.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, it's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We have got a great show lined up tonight. I'm so excited. You know why? Because it's Wednesday night and Greg Flam's going to be here. It's time for the swap meet. We want to, you know, if you want to call in and want us to evaluate your memorabilia, your collectibles, your junk. Because as I said last week, you know, that's going to be currency at some point. You know, when climate change changes the world and all we have no more, you know, paper money. It'll be what's in your attic or garage that you're making money off. So that old tin cup, you're going to have to sell that in some way. So don't throw any of that stuff out. You got to keep it. And call in, and Greg Flam will tell you how much it's worth.
I've been obsessed with trying to find my old concert T-shirts because he had mentioned, those are selling for a lot of money at the flea markets and what have you. And I'm like destroying our storage because I'm like, I gotta have that Van Halen shirt from 91.
Right. You have to have the pound cake Van Halen return, you know, Sammy Hagar stuff. For me, I feel like, I had the same problem. I lost all those shirts at some point. They just kind of get old and you throw them out. But I had a Beastie Boys shirt. But I don't feel like I had a good concert tee. I feel like I went to the Rose Records and got one there. Which is always a little bit of a knockoff. It's not the actual one that you get at the
Aragon.
Yeah,
it's not the one.
Right.
Yeah, like the Bruce Springsteen one that they you know, the one that's in the stadium is $65. The one you can get outside is $8, and that's the one you go with.
And it smells like paint, like someone just painted on the logo. And they did it at home with the iron. You're like, oh, cool. And the shirt's a little thicker than it should be.
We went to the Randolph Street Market a couple of weeks ago, and they had a dream, like the Dream Team. Remember those caricature, caricature ones? It was like $65.
So Greg's onto it. He said that's the sort of, you know, cool hip T-shirts of things that were happening in the 80s and 90s.
There was also they had a Grateful Dead shirt, and there was a couple of young girls who didn't really know what the Grateful Dead was, and they were trying to explain. The person was trying to explain who the Grateful Dead was to these girls.
It's it's a band. They have songs. The songs are really long. There's not really a hook. Most of the people are stoned. That's pretty much it. I got to find my Temple of the Dog T-shirt. I don't know what I did with that one. That's actually probably worth something right now. 312-981-7200. We'll talk with Greg coming up in the 10 o'clock hour tonight. Coming up at 9 o'clock hour, Jim O'Hare is going to be here, the longtime actor who played Jerry on Parks and Rec. is back. He's been all over WGN the last couple days. We'll sit down and talk with him about his career, about making it in show business, and his new independent film, Middleman, which is really good. It's interesting about the price of fame. He plays a character, he's a main character who is a CPA. His mom dies, and he goes cross-country because he believes he's got a calling, and that calling's to be a stand-up comedian. And it's a very dark movie, but it's a dark comedy. But the idea being that, what will you do to be famous? And that's what we'll talk with him about, that and that thread in his life. I mean, being in Hollywood and being on TV shows and films, what has fame done for him? Jim O'Hare, my guest tonight, 9 o'clock. At 8 o'clock, very excited about this too, Joel Weissman's here, the longtime host of Chicago Tonight Week in Review, the host and senior editor who's been in Chicago journalism and media for decades. That show is the longest running news program in Chicago. I think you take away the 10 o'clock news out of that, but the idea that this is a standalone weekend show. So we'll talk with him about that show, about journalism, about TV, and all sorts of stuff. He's my guest at the big table tonight. Mike Fouché's here. It's Wednesday night, so we got to talk about police reform. What happened to the consent decree? And get his thoughts as well on Comey, Comey, Comey. I told Ro if they're going to do any parody songs, they should do Just Like Heaven by The Cure. Comey, Comey, Comey. Right away.
It writes itself.
Right away. I mean, right away.
Show me how you do that trick. You don't even have to change the words.
You don't even have to change the words. That's when you know you got a good parody song. You don't even have to change the words. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon tonight. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will do the carryout. Stay with us. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We got a big show tonight, so let's get to the carryout. All right, here are today's top stories. Former FBI Director James Comey ready to testify tomorrow in front of the Senate committee. Today, he released his official statement on the matter that said that President Trump pressured him to let the investigation of Michael Flynn slide. And he wanted Comey to tell the world that Trump wasn't under investigation. And Comey also says that he told Trump that he wasn't under investigation or not. You know what? There are a lot of words, and I got to be honest. I read the first two paragraphs and went back to Words with Friends. It's not something. I mean, why spoil it? Right? The worst thing you want to do is read the transcript before he actually does it. Restaurant and bars are supposed to be opening early so you can drink beer, eat wings, and listen to the charming senator with a southern drawl try to extract information from the former FBI director. Now, on that meeting on July 14th, I said, Washington Post. That's what I think all senators sound like. Because there's nothing that says, yeah, we'll have another round, than watching Senate testimony. Maybe if they got Kathy Griffin to judge the senator's clothing on the walk up to the Capitol building, maybe. Or Tony Siragusa, the goose, to do color. Or Jay Cutler on the sideline saying, don't care. Something like that. Not since Ollie North have we had this much interest in the old Senate live mic. Drinking games, anyone? That's classified. Drink! I have nothing more to say on that matter. Drink! I plead the fifth. And then you got to drink a fifth. Hey, this game is not for lightweights. Today, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein went in front of the Senate to say that he didn't want to be in front of the Senate. That's essentially what he said. They were beat up pretty good by senators wanting more information. But then again, that's what this is, right? A place for senators to speak loudly and remind people of their name before the next election. I'm surprised they didn't introduce themselves with campaign websites. Hi, Senator McCain for America.net. Why won't you answer the question? Although Senator Kamala Harris from California was reprimanded by the Senate chair for being mean to Rosenstein and others. Aww. She was chided for not letting Rosenstein talk, although to her defense, I have nothing more to say on this matter, talking. It's ridiculous to watch that. Anyway, that was the opening act, right? Tomorrow, the headliner. Looking forward to it. All right, this is my favorite story of the day. North Korea, yeah, the irresponsible nuclear weapon-touting maniacs of the Far East have slammed President Trump for his, quote, short-sighted and silly decision to withdraw from the Paris Accord on climate change. Oh, man. When North Korea is questioning competency, hell hath definitely froze over. And on cue, Mayor Emanuel says Chicago will follow the Paris Accords and the emission standards set up by former President Barack Obama, because that's exactly what Trump wants you to do. It's pretty obvious to me that Trump wants to shrink the government and give all the money that he can to military. So he wants to take all the other issues and make governors and mayors take care of it. And looking at the list of cities that are stepping up, it's working. Another great story coming out of social media. Some lawyers believe it's unconstitutional for President Trump to block people on Twitter. Wow. Yep, I guess he does that on occasion and probably well-deserved. But it's a new wrinkle with the new technology. Does the president in chief have the right to block citizens from his Twitter account, which some free speech advocates say is a public forum, or at least the way he uses it? I got to say, I think this is what Louis Armstrong was singing about when he said, "What a wonderful world." You know, like I was always wondering what the point of that song was. And when I feel like there's a Twitter controversy, I now get it. It's right there. The stalemate between the governor and state legislature in Kansas finally broke as Republicans went against the governor and raised taxes. Governor Brownback had cut taxes and was trying to force the state to cut spending along with it. A lot of similarities there to what's going on in Illinois, although I don't think Kansas has a Speaker Madigan. So maybe not. Democratic gubernatorial candidate J.B. Pritzker got the endorsement of the AFL-CIO today, which means what? I don't even know what it means anymore. Pritzker, whose family owns the Hyatt, which has been having very publicized negative labor issues, you know, the kind that get the inflatable rat out in front, which I think his name is Ratty. Forgot his name, but I think it's probably Ratty. So cute. Whenever I see that inflatable raft, I'm like, I want to work there. Also, it's June. The primary election's not till March. Seems a little early. Maybe they just realized that this might be the last nice day of the year with climate change, so they wanted to have their press conference outside. That could be it. Or, I don't know, Mike Madigan forced him to do it. One of the two. It's got to be one of the two. In weather? Wow, what a day. What do we live in? Is this, I'm sorry, did we change the name to San Chicago? Is it Los Windy City out there? California, Cook County? No? Beauty. In sports, the Cubs look for a sweep tonight against the Marlins. The Marlins have looked pretty bad in the last couple of days. I think it's because they're used to playing with live aquariums and turquoise outfield. What do I know? Big Country going tonight, John Lackey. Hopefully he'll just forego a Cubs hat and just wear the cowboy hat instead. Gives him good luck. Why not? They're World Series champs. They can do whatever they want. A win tonight, six in a row. Right now, tied for the top spot in the NL Central. It's looking more and more like the Cubs are going to have to win a division to make the playoffs because the NL West just keeps on winning. One of those teams, the upstart Colorado Rockies, coming to town tomorrow. The White Sox got back to their winning ways by beating up on the Tampa Bay Rays. Boring. They try to put another one on the board tonight. Sanchez hit a home run last night that really didn't go out of the park, but it hit the top of the stadium. So, hey, as they say, there's a million ways to hit a home run. Oh, they don't say that? Just one way? Well, anyway, the umps gave it to him, so whatever. The Sox right now are still a half game up on the Royals for last place. All right, let's do it. The Cavs and Warriors playing tonight in Cleveland. Game 3 of the NBA Finals. LeBron versus the world. Can he bring back the Cavs from the brink once again? I hate to say it, but I'm going for the Cavs. Scratch that. No, I'm not. Sorry, I can't do it. It's the Cavs. Who plays on that team? I know I have Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, but who else? Brad Doherty? Larry Nance still playing on that team? Is Craig Elo? Is he the backup point guard? Does Hot Rod Williams still come off the bench for the Cavs? Anybody? That's pretty much. I'm just looking for an excuse to say Hot Rod Williams. It's been too long. Tomorrow night, we'll make a bunch of funny references of players who played for the Nashville Predators in the 80s. Oh, right. That's not a thing. The Predators even sucked the joy out of that bit. The Stanley Cup Finals back in Pittsburgh tomorrow night. Any Bears news? Did we sign Jeremy Maclin yet? Oh, we're not gonna, are we? Let me guess. We like the team where we are. We feel like we can compete. Keep looking at the pendant. You're getting sleepy. Go Bears. Huh. I'm up. And finally, this weekend's going to be busy. We got Lit Fest, we got the Blues Fest, we got Spring Awakening, and of course, the Naked Bike Ride. I just hope that people don't get confused and do the Printer's Row Naked Book and Bike the Blues Fest on mushrooms. That's just going to be too much. That's the carryout for June 7, 2017. Hey, you like chili flakes? You don't? Nobody likes chili flakes? Ah, why did we order so many chili flakes? All right, coming up, Mike Fouché. We're going to talk a little bit consent decree, police reform. We'll also talk a little Comey, too. Joins us every Wednesday, and he'll be here. And also, big table tonight, Joel Weissman. It's a download on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob, I got two corrections on the carryout already.
Really?
It's not Ratty, it's Scabby.
Okay.
That's one. And two, Hot Rod Williams passed away.
What?
Yeah, 2 years ago. I don't know if that's true. A texter told me that, but still. Huh. And I don't know if that changes the bit. I still think Hot Rod Williams is the best basketball name in history.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So or, I guess yeah, we're honoring him. We're honoring
him. Or Vinny the Microwave Johnson.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, how can you forget?
Well, when the Bulls play, when the next time the Bulls play the Pistons, we'll have a lot of those Vinny the Microwave Johnson jokes.
Did Rick Mahorn have a nickname? I don't think he did. Not one that comes to mind, anyway.
I just remember, I think of Rick Mahorn, he shows up in the show Detroiters in Comedy Central, which is a great episode where Rick Mahorn's like he's doing local commercials. But I always thought him to be, he had some, did he have not a college? Was it like a, like they would say where he like went to jail or something like that? Like he had a, like whenever they'd introduce him, he had like a thing. It was like from the penitentiary or something like that.
How about John Spider Sally?
Yeah, see, that's classic.
There you go.
Classics.
So real quick, as you were doing the thing and getting the show going and whatnot, CNN breaking news, of course, they're talking about the previewing Comey's thing side and down the other. And I'm looking at the billboards, you know, Comey, awkward silence, asked for loyalty. And I'm thinking to myself, this is a lot like Thanksgiving dinner. Awkward silence, asking for loyalty, people screaming at each other,
maybe that's
weird conversation. Like,
sounds
what's
like an Onion article, right? I got to say, and it's funny too, like, because this is all a big story about what's going to happen tomorrow. So any Comey story tonight is just a tee up for 24. It's almost like all the networks are dipping the toe in the water to be like, well, do people like this story? Because you're going to get 24 hours of it tomorrow.
Well, real quick, and I want to get to the news, obviously, but you and Pete, what do you guys think is going to happen tomorrow?
I think he's going to read a statement, and then he's going to do – I mean, he's not a loyalist. Like today we saw a couple of guys that were on that were doing the testimony that were a little bit of loyalists to the Trump administration, and they wouldn't answer anything. And it was kind of it was futile. So my question is, does he read the statement and then just go, I got nothing else to say on it, refer to my statement? Or is he, because he's freewheeling and he doesn't have anything to worry about, that he actually spills more and confuses the heck out of everybody? Pete?
Yeah, I think he is going to – he's just going to go ape. It's going to be wonderful.
You think he's going to go ham? He's all right.
I hope he does that.
It'd be good for all the bars in the area.
Absolutely.
Right?
There we go.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Mike Fouché in studio. It is Wednesday. That means he's here.
It's Wednesday, which is Mike Fouché Day.
Mike Fouché Day.
It's so great.
Good to see you. Thanks for coming in, Mike. Hey. Of course, does Daily Line at dailyline.net. Also, the Alder Track podcast is done by Daily Line, which comes out on Fridays, WGN Plus.
We're recording it this week here at WGN. It's going to be great.
Oh, that's great.
Everyone should listen. Yeah, we're going to be talking about why is Chicago having so many problems in Springfield.
Well, do I get to be in? I'm not involved?
No, you're not interested. Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's just a real bummer.
Yeah.
I give you your big break, and then you just take off, and I'm out. I could have added so much pepper. I would add so much pepper.
You would.
To that.
I
so
bet.
Much spice.
I know.
All right, let's talk. I mean, why don't we start with Comey? Not really a Chicago story, a Springfield story, but I would say, you know, there are some players that have some Illinois interest involved in this story. And also, I mean, how does it play out in Illinois? People are watching.
Everything's grinding to a halt. I mean, honestly, everybody that I've talked to in politics, they have got 9 a.m. tomorrow morning blocked off. I mean, this is what they're going to be watching. This is what they're going to be paying attention to. Because, I mean, this is it, right? I mean, essentially, what happens with Comey is going to probably decide a lot of what happens with the Trump administration and also Congress. I mean, you know, there is this continued resistance among Republicans in Congress to address the issue of Comey and the Russia investigation, and there's a ton of voters that are watching and paying attention to this, and there's a lot of Republican congressmen.
Do you believe, Mike, that the idea that this is getting so much attention, that you know, there's even like a pop cultural element of people opening bars early to have people?
Yeah, there are.
I mean, do you believe that the Congress watches that and says, "Oh, the American taxpayers, the people, they are interested in this story"?
I think congressmen are freaked out with a capital F. I mean, this is, or maybe PH, I don't know. I mean, I think this is going to be a really big deal because Comey has absolute total 1,000% credibility. And he was taking notes while he was having these meetings. And, you know, those contemporaneous notes are admissible evidence if there was a criminal trial. And essentially, he is demonstrating explicitly from what we've seen of the written testimony that was released already that he felt like Trump was attempting to put him into, and he used this word, a patronage situation. So, I mean, that is completely 1,000% not illegal, but really, really unethical.
Well, I asked the question. I mean, you mentioned criminal. I mean, are people assuming that they're going to get information that will lead to this being something, a bombshell criminal, or is it just voyeur, the idea that we get to peek behind closed doors and see how Trump, you know, talks to the FBI directors and others in this case?
Well, I think that what Comey does is that he provides absolutely incontrovertible evidence that Trump was attempting to shut down the investigation into Russia's influence on his campaign and his organization. Now, what's still missing is, well, what does Trump have to lose by anybody knowing that Russia has any influence? Well, there's this thing that we still haven't opened up, which is his tax records. And his tax records could show whether or not who was doing lending to him.
Financial interest.
And
right.
There's a lot of evidence, there's a lot of discussion that the Russians, in fact, his son said as much, that they borrowed a lot of money from Russian banks right. controlled by Putin. So Congress actually has the ability to request his IRS tax returns and open them. Republicans in Congress have said up to this point that they won't.
You know, it's interesting because a lot what happens with the Trump administration when we think about it locally, we've seen two stories that I thought were pretty locally connected. One, Republicans and Democrats urging Governor Rauner to get into the health care fight about overhauling Medicaid and the concept of what's going to happen in the Senate. They want the governor, because up to this point, he's been mum. He hasn't gone against, but he's also
Governor
said,
Rauner.
Yeah, Governor Rauner. He hasn't really been favorable of what's happening in that. Plus, we see with the climate change business with the Paris Accords today, Mayor Emanuel saying, we're as a city going to continue to do this. It's interesting to see how Illinois and the city of Chicago are sort of interpreting and moving on some of the big ticket items in Washington.
So I've said this before. I served in the Clinton administration. I was a staffer and I ended up working in the Secretary's office of the U.S. Department of Energy. And I remember very, very clearly when the Starr Report was released in 1998 or 99. And when the Starr Report came out, everyone remembers that's with the cigar and all that other stuff.
Monica Lewinsky, right.
Monica Lewinsky. It pretty much, I remember reading the report and thinking, wow, we're not going to be able to do anything more in the Clinton administration. It's all over. At this point, we're just hanging out. And, you know, people who had joined the Clinton administration thinking that they were going to make America a better place were really, really depressed. I was depressed. And so really, essentially, what's happening here with this Comey testimony, if it follows the path that was set up by his written testimony, is that it's basically going to make the entire Trump administration grind to a halt. There is no saving it at this point.
And there's obviously political part of that, but there's also administrative part of that, that, you know, because of the shadow and the clouds that are over it, it becomes a lot harder for an agenda, get a risky agenda, something that's going to reform American government. It's hard to do that stuff when you're constantly dodging investigation.
Well, and that your credibility is shot and that Trump won't follow the advice of anybody. And he keeps throwing his staffers under the bus. I mean, there's a whole series of things that make it difficult for him to attract good people and do good things.
All right, let's move off of Comey. We'll take a break here and we'll come back. I want to talk about police reform. We had the FOP union president, Kevin Graham, in here not too long ago. And I know you've talked to him as well. And he kind of talked away from the consent decree. And we saw this week a very interesting way that
Kevin
that Emanuel went about police reform. So we'll talk about that. Mike Fouché from The Daily Line and the Aldercast podcast in studio as he is every Wednesday night. Stay with us. Mike Fouché, The Daily Line in studio. We're talking about politics as we do every Wednesday night, usually local. We just spent a little bit of time on Comey because that's what everybody wants
to talk about.
I loved the story, and I think it's a really important story about Mayor Emanuel's deal with the Justice Department over police reform. We got the Department of Justice scathing report. We said it was going to a consent decree, which was with a judge. And they have shifted course. This, of course, all after the Laquan McDonald incident and everything that happened that he promised the taxpayers and the citizens of Chicago.
Yeah.
Where are we at on this? I mean, is it cowardice on the mayor to not go the full to go after consent decree, or is it actual political maneuvering and strategy?
The politics on this is just tectonic. I mean, on the one hand, you have the black community, which has been demanding increased police reform. And actually, yesterday, when the mayor was doing this 125 years of the L, a whole bunch of people, a bunch of teenagers, started protesting, yelling out 16 shots and a cover-up, ruining his event. So, you know, this is not going away, you know, that kind of protest and that protest element. And then on the other hand, the mayor is about to start negotiating
the police contract.
Yeah. And a lot of the people who are police officers and their families live on the northwest and southwest sides of Chicago, which are pretty much a voting block. They call them the old ethnics and those neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was an area that he really had to work hard for in the last election. And so he needs to be able to get this police contract through, and he doesn't have a whole lot to negotiate for the police
contract. And then you add the third part about it is the Department of Justice is now under new management, if you will, with a new attorney general who has come out and said they don't believe in consent decrees. They think that that's all hogwash, and they do it differently. So there's a good chance that he would have gone through all this, and the Department of Justice said, we're not doing that.
Yeah, you know, I don't buy it. I mean, I think that if he jumped up and down and said, the Department of Justice won't give us a consent decree that we want, they would have said, okay, fine, we'll give you a consent decree. But I mean, I think this is more than anything about local. I think that he is trying to line up some stuff in the northwest and southwest side communities so that they'll remember him. They don't want more police reform. And he has almost bupkis to negotiate with the police department, with the police officers. You know, he needs to get more stringent management of police officers on a number of different issues in the contract. And in the past, the way that they've done it is the police have said, sure, we'll give you some of those things that you want.
What are you going to give us?
If you give us more pay.
Right.
And the city doesn't have money for pay.
Is it the independent monitor that they're talking about taking over the police department?
That wouldn't be happening. It wouldn't be taking over the police department.
Sorry, I used the wrong word there.
That's important because that has happened in other places.
Supervises? What do you say?
The independent monitor would be watching, would be checking in.
Hanging out?
Pretty much. And wouldn't have authority in order to make changes.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I had on my sheet the question, does that mean the superintendent's out? But it's not.
In other cities, that's happened.
Yeah,
you know, an independent monitor in Cincinnati and also in New Orleans, when they had consent decrees, the independent monitor, I think in New Orleans, the independent monitor actually had the power to make changes to the police department. Hmm. So it's different in every different place. Here in Chicago, you're basically going to have a person that's going to be, okay, you know, there's this thing, great. You know, it's basically a report with a binder.
Wow. Not exactly what people were calling for, but as you said, probably the best case scenario for the rank and file Chicago police who were hoping that there wouldn't be a full-on police reform.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Great story. This other great story this week, Chris Kennedy really pushing this as a gubernatorial candidate about property tax assessments and the strange way that the rich in this area can appeal taxes and not pay their fair share. This was called out by Chris Kennedy in a surprising manner because he's a millionaire.
Well, he's been the benefit of a lot of property tax stuff.
And the Tribune, this is really a Tribune's move. But this is a big thing because this is how we've kind of, I mean, even in a way, I think about it. I'm like, Mayor Emanuel, when property taxes went up big time last year, there was kind of a wink and a nod well, you can always, you know, you can change the assessment.
Well, the Trib released a huge story yesterday where they went through years and years and years of property tax assessments and also appeals and found that there is a broad disparity between wealthier neighborhoods in Cook County versus poorer neighborhoods and communities in Cook County, that wealthier neighborhoods tend to get their appeal, and then have their assessments lower. Whereas poorer neighborhoods, they don't make the appeals, and they tend to have higher assessments.
A lot of it
on the dollar.
I mean, you and I know that. I know this from living in Chicago, not even from being a journalist, but just living in Chicago. That yeah, if you got the right lawyer, you can get anything done.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of lawyers that specialize in this, and it costs money to hire them.
I don't know about you. I get a letter in the mail every 6 months saying, "Would you like to appeal your property taxes?" You know, from some attorney. And the truth is that this ends up so that the poor people in Chicago are paying on the dollar for more of their houses on their property than well-to-do people in Cook County. And, you know, if you've worked in politics in Chicago, if, you know, you've been around this sort of thing, you've heard about this stuff. Mm-hmm. But actually what you've really heard a lot more about is commercial properties, because commercial properties, the big commercial properties. And this is why it's so funny. Chris Kennedy, he used to own and manage Merchandise Mart.
The biggest property in the world.
And now he owns these other buildings that are right next to Merchandise Mart on Wolf Point. So he has really been a beneficiary of a lot of these appeals. And the large commercial properties have always gotten these fantastic appeals on a regular basis. And who are the people that are doing the representing? Well, it turns out that House Speaker Mike Madigan has a firm that does this sort of stuff.
That's what I'm saying.
I have a friend who manages a number of properties, and she actually got a phone call from Speaker Madigan saying, would you like to be represented in my firm?
Mike, I may be a talk show host. Don't know much about the city we live in, but if you're a state legislator who deals with property taxes and what the rate is, and your side gig is to how to appeal those taxes so you're going to pay much, that seems like just an abhorrent conflict of interest.
Yeah, it is. I don't know what else to tell you.
Right?
It is. And
so does
and,
Chris Kennedy have a point? Do you think that, I mean, that anything has to change, has to go through the Constitution, has to go through so much, right, to make it happen?
The Illinois Constitution
there's no way that anyone down there is going
to
do anything.
The Illinois Constitution has to be rewritten. And you know who was one of the main writers of the Illinois Constitution? Michael Madigan. And when we had a decision about whether or not to consider the Illinois Constitution, I think in 2014 it was, there, Mike Madigan led the campaign in order to keep it from being reopened. You know, so I think that, yeah, Mike Madigan is at the center of a lot of this. And, you know, it's a problem.
Wow. Mike Fouché, thedailyline.net. You can also check him out on the Alder Track podcast and WGN.
The Aldercast. Yeah, listen to us this Friday.
Comes out Friday. Mike, great to see you. Thanks for coming in, bud.
Great to be here.
Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Jim O'Hare is going to be here, the longtime actor from Lansing, Illinois. He played Jerry on Parks and Rec. He's done a lot of stuff. You'd recognize him. He's got a new movie out called Middleman. It's an independent film that he is the star in, and we'll talk to him about. It's an interesting movie. It's a movie about a stand-up or a CPA who wants to be a stand-up comedian. After his mom dies, he goes for his dream to be a Las Vegas headliner. He has no experience, but he goes out there because he's chasing fame. And the movie really looks at what would you do for fame and the price of fame. And so it's a dark comedy. And so we'll talk with Jim O'Hare about that same concept. I mean, as an actor who came from Chicago, did Second City, and is now out, you know, on so many different sitcoms and movies. We'll talk to him about his life and what he'll do for fame. That's coming up in the 9 o'clock hour tonight. Well, my guest tonight at the big table is the host and senior editor of Chicago Tonight Week in Review, which airs every Friday night on WTTW. Joel Weissman has been the face of the program for 39 years. It's the longest-running news program in Chicago, and it brings together journalists and media professionals to hash out what the heck happened throughout the week in news. Weissman has a long history in Chicago broadcast and news. Outside of the 39 years with Week in Review, he's also known to many as a political commentator for WGN-TV. He did that for a while. He's also served as a metro editor at the Chicago Sun-Times. He's a Midwest correspondent for the Washington Post. Weissman also has his own law firm where he represents television media personalities. He's been doing that work for over four decades. Joel Weissman, a lifelong Chicagoan, my guest tonight at the big table. Joel, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
It's good to see you outside the TTW studio. So talk about this. I mean, I didn't realize this. I was looking up the research and looking at different things. It's the longest running show in Chicago news. I mean, the idea of 39 years. What's that mean to you that you've been able to be on the air since, what, 1978?
means I was able to keep a job. And I think the reason is because I'd only go in there once a week. So they couldn't really get to know how bad I was.
Come on. But the idea of, I mean, it's how news shows, news programming, the television business, it's all changed. But the idea to be a consistent voice for and weekly, daily, whatever it is, but for four decades, there's something about that. And talk about what it means to have that kind of consistency in a business that is known for its inconsistency.
Well, I take a lot of pride in the fact that it has been consistent. And, you know, when I started that show, television was mostly for pretty people. And you had to be good looking or handsome. I didn't meet either of those tests. That's why I went to public television. But the truth is, what we wanted to do was provide analysis, not just report the news, but analyze what it meant. And at the same time, try to say, because of what it meant that day, what it was, how it was going to play out in the months or years ahead. Now that's a pretty common format.
Right.
You see it a lot on the cable channels. There's a panel for everything. But we've found four people. It was patterned after Washington Week in Review, and that show had four people, and each of them had a different beat. One covered the White House, one covered the Pentagon, one covered Congress. I forget what the fourth one covered. And they used to, and they tried to have us do the same thing, to get together like on Thursdays and say what we were going to talk about that Friday in a phone conference, and then have each of the people ask a question of the person who was reporting on his beat.
Yeah,
we tried that for a couple of weeks. Didn't work at all.
Didn't work.
And we didn't have four regular people, so we always had different guests, but sometimes those guests more often than others.
Well, that's always been the strength to me over time watching Week in Review is the fact that you can get people from the Tribune, the Sun-Times, from newscasts, from others to come together and talk about the news from their experience.
What happened that was interesting is when we started it was only newspaper people. But as time wore on, we got people like you, the electronic media, to join in. And then when we first started, you know, we were super serious and we didn't include sports. And then eventually we also included sports every week.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah, mine too, actually, because that's where you can really kind of fool around.
Well, I mean, I think about it, it's nice to know it's patterned, but in 1978, I mean, I would think that there's not a lot of panel shows at that time. I mean, different way. Now you think about it and you mentioned, I mean, that's the format of a CNN.
No, at the time there were no straight impartial shows. They were partisan shows. You might have a reporter or two interviewing a newsmaker. And the four television stations did have that. I think one was called Target News and one was called City Desk. And they'd have one guest and one interrogator or perhaps two. And, in fact, that was the first time I was ever in electronic journalism. I would be invited to be a guest to grill some of these people.
What did you learn from those experiences that you took to Week in Review, the idea of being in those shows that you improved on the format?
Well, what I learned was that if you don't get an answer, you got to keep asking. And I also learned that, you know, once the red light is on, they have to talk. Otherwise, they just say the same thing over and over and over again. And so you could keep firing the questions, and you'd usually get some kind of an answer. And then when you have a whole panel, I would ask if someone else would agree with that answer. And before you know it, a genuine discussion might erupt.
You know, I think about there's so, and I want to talk about this throughout the hour, just the idea of the art of being able to moderate a panel. Because I've done it in forums. I'll have these chairs on election night or all filled. It is a difficult thing to be able to swivel. I mean, you have to move your head. You have to make sure everybody's included. But most importantly, you're running against the clock.
Absolutely right. And one of the biggest problems is to, A, make sure that everybody gets involved, and particularly on television. So if you have the sports guy sitting there for 25 minutes and you have a 30-minute show, everybody's saying, what's that guy doing there? Who is that guy? So we'll usually pull them in early. And the other thing is you want to try to, if you can, kind of distribute the time evenly. And so you get a chance to say, well, do you agree with that? Or, well, what about this so-and-so after the first person has spoken? And it just kind of flows naturally after you've done it this long. But it's important to make sure that there's inclusion. And it's important to tell the guests that they're not giving a book report. They're supposed to join in.
Right. Well, what I love about it, and Week in Review always shines to me when everyone takes a topic and all four panelists are working, you're working the questions, you're moving it in. There's no doubt about it. That's the best when you have it going on. But what you are working against the clock, it's a 25-minute show or whatever it is, and there's so much material that you throw out there. Yeah. I guess the question is, when do you know to move on?
You're an editor on the fly, and there are two ways of judging it usually. One is, if it's an important story, you're going to give it as much time as it reasonably can get. And if it's a less important story, you're going to kind of race through it. But if it's a story, even if it's important, and the discussion dies down, and you have four people agreeing, you know it's time to move along. So what I have is like a little cheat sheet, and I have extra subjects I can introduce if we've exhausted the ones we have. And I'll just, on the fly, omit some of those that we don't have time for. So I prioritize the stories.
And as Ro and Anna said, as you know, you're famous for a very unique way of getting people to shut up if they're talking too long, and that might be a little bit of a kick under the table. Is that true? That's
absolutely untrue. Ro has always tried to depict me as a violent man. It's not true.
But
we do use some hand signals, hopefully the camera doesn't pick them up.
There you go.
And I just try to, if they're going slow or we're winding up, I'll kind of take my hands in a circular motion.
We get it right from the source. That's good. Joel Weissman, my guest tonight. He's the host and senior editor of Chicago Tonight Week in Review, which can be seen on WTTW Channel 11 every Friday night, 7 o'clock. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more with Joel Weissman here at the Big Table. Stay with us. All right, back in the studio here on the download, 720 WGN. Joel Weissman's my guest at the Big Table, a longtime host of Chicago Tonight Week in Review. 39 years. I realized we should have waited a couple more months. We could have got a 40th anniversary story out of you.
January.
There you go. It's amazing to me because as we were talking about the format and the idea of how television news has changed, one thing that Chicago Tonight Week in the Review really relies on is journalists. Journalists to come in studio to analyze, to give you their thoughts on the stories they've been covering. And one of the strengths of the show is how diverse it is and the people that you ask to be on the program. As we see this onslaught of almost this attack on journalists, on news, mainstream media, the New York Times, you know, all the way down the line from politicians and the like, what's your take on that? I mean, the idea of whether or not journalists are storytellers, are they analysts, should they give their opinion? Let's have a conversation about that. Like, what do you think about where we're at and the way the country views journalists?
Well, in the newspaper news columns and on many online news sources, if it's news, what you're doing is giving facts, not opinions. What's happening is that we've gotten a little bit of a blend of that, and I must say that other panel shows have been to blame for some of that, because what you have is, in addition to news people on the panels, you have partisans on the panel.
Right.
Spokesmen for, you know, each of the parties, and then you have the moderator and usually two news people and two partisans. And that's not even analysis. What that is spinning, and you have two partisans spinning and two news people and a moderator trying to hold their feet to the fire. And frankly, a lot of times they don't do a very good job of it.
That's a great point. I mean, the idea that CNN and MSNBC and Fox and other places have taken what Americans have known to be a place for journalists to talk about the stories and put partisan politics in its place. And we haven't really noticed. I mean, I'm a pretty literate guy. I understand the media and how it works, but there are a lot of times that I am thinking that is a journalist up there and it's
not.
Well,
it can creep up on you. And in part of it is that it's become entertainment. So it's newfotainment, if you would. And the people who yell the loudest and the people who dress the flashiest often get the most attention who don't comb their hair or whatever. And so one of the things, and this is not a commercial for our show, but, you know, we don't have partisans on. And a lot of times we say things that might inflame one party or the other. They ask to come on so they can give their side. Well, their side is not welcome on our show. Only the analysis of what they say in the reportage of the facts of what they're saying.
For all the panelists that you have on, do you find some panelists in the old school form of not wanting to opine on something or to
yes.
just give the facts, and you want to push them to like, what do you think on that? And they don't want to go there?
That's true. Some of them are afraid to give their opinions. And the reason I ask for their opinions is because theoretically they should be nonpartisan opinions, unbiased opinions. Just as a reporter by definition is a trained observer. So what's your opinion of what you've observed? And I'm not afraid to do that because what we really do is have an internal fact check, because you have these other unbiased people
that are on the panel
right. that are going to pull these people back in if they're giving a partisan opinion.
You know, I think about that concept, the concept of the panel show that you see on CNN or MSNBC and the partisans getting involved. And you also think about the journalism schools and the way that students are coming through the feeders to say, okay, well, I want to be that. I want to be an entertainment. I want to be on CNN. I want to be you know, whoever's the host of the nighttime show. Do you see that sort of being a trickle effect in the way that more and more people are getting into the business to do that as opposed to the facts-only newspaper reporter stuff that you've known throughout your career?
Well, yeah, I think there is a lot of that. And part of it is the nature of the business as it is now. For instance, when I was a newspaper reporter, over time you would develop sources. And if you stayed in one market, you could gather up quite a number of them. Young reporters today often don't have sources. And part of it is because there's a lot of pressure on them to produce things quickly. And, and unfortunately, if it leads, it bleeds, particularly on local television. You know, you're going to have maybe 5, 6, 8 stories that are violence-oriented. They're terrible yeah. stories, but they're not that meaningful to the people that they don't affect, but they're life-shattering for those that they do. So you don't get necessarily the chance to really analyze them or develop sources that can tell you what this trend really means.
Well, it's also interesting because we see this attack on sources, and a lot of it is the government sources that we're seeing that are populating the
right.
pages of the New York Times or the Washington Post. And it almost feels like the way it's being spun is that it's new. The concept that,
right.
that, you know, this thing leaked out, we got to take care of this, is brand new. They hate the Trump administration. But that's not necessarily a case. You go back generation to generation. That's how a lot of people covering
reporters
politics
reporters have
stories.
Always relied on leaks and sources, and in many times, in an untruthful way, even lifting up documents that they shouldn't have their hands on, and, you know, kind of anything to get the story. From the front page days here in Chicago.
Right.
So there's nothing really the matter with sources. But from the other side, I mean, if some of these people are breaking the law internally by leaking things, they should be prosecuted. And the one who prosecuted the most of them was Obama.
Right.
Not really Trump, even though he's complained the loudest.
He's complained the loudest, but you're right. I mean, there has been in modern politics seems to be a movement to crack down on the idea of the anonymous source or being able to have this relationship with reporters. When you think about that coupled with the idea of this this attack on the integrity
yeah.
of the industry.
Yeah, that's a very, very disturbing thing. The press has always been an easy whipping boy. And the old Mayor Daley here, Richard J. Daley, used to berate the press constantly, and he'd get great results from doing that. And whatever he'd say, people would believe, and they would always say that you can't trust the press, they're bad people, on and on and on. But right now, you know, when the president comes out so overtly, some people, everybody's the president. The president deserves a certain amount of respect, and you're used to the president telling the truth until recently. If he says the press lies and cheats and shouldn't
right,
be believed,
right.
it carries a little bit more weight. And if he's got these loyal supporters, as Trump does, those supporters want to believe and swallow everything that he says. And so you get this whole segment of society that does not trust us.
Even just listening to you, I mean, talking about old man Mayor Daley, this concept of, you know, this is not new. I mean, there have been,
right.
I mean, I think about his son, too, the incessant complaints about the media getting the story wrong. I mean, maybe because of social media, it's changed the way that they can. But this is not new where the government.
Well, you know, if I could take you back, I used to teach law school. And, you know, the free press was envisioned as a series of pamphleteers. You know, each person would print his own pamphlet. So if somebody said something you didn't like, you'd print your pamphlet contradicting that. And then when we had way more newspapers, papers were openly, you know, Republican or Democratic.
Right, right.
I mean, right here in this building, I mean, who could have been more Republican than Colonel McCormick?
McCormick, right, right.
But, you know, in today's setup, you don't have the lesser voice getting equal time or equal space.
Right. Joel Weissman is my guest. He is the host and senior editor of Chicago Tonight Week in Review, which airs every Friday night on WTTW. We'll take a break at tonight's news, and we'll continue our conversation with Joel here on The Download. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Joel Weissman, the longtime host of Chicago Tonight Week in Review, which can be seen Friday nights. I'm excited because I love the show, and I've been on it, which is awesome. And it's great to have you in studio, not all suited up in the bright lights where we get to see you at Channel 11. So always good. Let's talk about – I want to talk about the news business. And, you know, there was a couple pieces that came out. Rob Feeder had both of them. One was, you know, the end of the era of News Blues, where the editor came out and had a lot of things to say about where the news business has gone wrong. And then he also had a report about how less people are watching the 10 o'clock news. You know, from your vantage point as being a Chicago media personality for the years that you have, do you see a future for the 10 o'clock news, for those kind of programs that are on terrestrial channels that are reaching certain audiences? Or at a certain point, are they going to have to change the model?
I think what's happening now is they actually are changing the model. And they're changing it in part by kind of almost merging, you know, blogging and tweeting in with the regular newscasts. I don't see a terribly bright future. I wouldn't advise someone to go into conventional journalism, as it were, unless they could go into all these connective fields. And I mean, part of it's their own fault. It's not just the internet. Part of it is what they're offering up. Is it important? And is it compelling to watch? And one of the, I talked about this earlier, you know, when you have so much crime, if that's your the only news in Chicago. And one of the reasons they do that, it's cheap and it's easy to cover. And, you know, a lot of times you don't need sources. All you need is a camera. And the way the business is changing a lot of in loads of cities. I mean, the reporters are shooting these things all by themselves. They're editing them all by themselves. And then they're talking, they're podcasting about them. They're blogging about them. And that's cheap. You got five different landing places for this piece of cheap news, and so it's that offering is not great. There's very little analysis in conventional news of the 10 o'clock news or for a lot of regular terrestrial radio, and there's not a lot of personality because a lot of these television, particularly. These people are schooled by consultants who want the same thing. I mean, if you go and see, with the exception of my client Tom Skilling, you go look for a weather report anywhere across the country. They're all the same.
So, I mean, it's interchangeable. I mean, you hear I will say this, that you'll hear a ton of people who were maybe in Chicago, lived here, and then moved to other places, and they will ultimately always say that the quality and the value of the news, the 10 o'clock news in Chicago, is better than everywhere. There's a vibe here that you're
I would agree with that, and we have some awfully talented people here. But being better than everywhere may not be the standard that all these young viewers are wanting.
You know, I think about what do young viewers want. I mean, we're not the two equipped guys to talk about that, but I will say that.
Well, you are.
Yeah, but I mean, you think about CNN and MSNBC and the kind of what we talked about in the first half, this partisan news and the way that they've spun it to be much more about the spin than it is about the facts and even analysis. But then I think about a new generation of shows that are almost like, I think of Anthony Bourdain. You know, or the Vice Channel, which is HBO does Vice, but these documentary style shows that do a little bit more film they seem to take a little bit more energy in telling a story or having the personality tell the story and give their point of view. I mean, there is some innovation in news, and I wonder if at some point or another the barriers will be broken down when it comes to cheap, quote, you know, what it takes to put this stuff together, and we'll see the product change.
It's possible that we will, but more likely what's going to happen is you're going to have a whole bunch of different offerings that come under the grand umbrella of news.
Right.
I mean, if you want to call Anthony Bourdain news, be my guest. I call it eating, or I call it travelogging.
Sure.
And you don't really get a lot of news. You might find out some interesting facts about the places he goes or the recipes.
Right.
And there are other things that are more long form and documentary, if you will, in nature. You know, public television, I hate to, you know, be a trumpet
for
us.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, we've managed to walk that line pretty well in terms of giving some substance and news and history. But it's a tough landscape out there, and you're going to have all kinds of offerings. And I don't think anybody can say they're informed by just turning on the news at 10 o'clock.
Well, I mean, in this day and age, too, you talk about the stories that are covered at 10 o'clock. If you are at all paying attention, your media diet is Twitter or other places,
right.
You already know those stories before you even get to 10 o'clock.
Right, and if you want to look for opinion on the web, you go to an aggregator
right.
or a news aggregator and all these columnists and everything. So there's lots of places to go. So you have to be a little entrepreneurial in your quest of this information. And unfortunately, some people don't want to have that full plate, and they go to their one favorite or two favorite sites.
You know, having you in studio, Joel, to talk about news is great. And it reminds me, too, that one of the reasons I do go to news and the shows that I want to watch is because I am attracted to the personality. I want to know about the stories and the news that you've covered, and you use that experience in a nonpartisan way to inform the story that you're talking about. You're essentially, do you see yourself that way as an analyst, as a broadcaster, as someone who's been a former newspaper editor, that you are a storyteller, that you do take all the information that you've accrued throughout your years and you're able to display it when you can?
Well, I try to. I mean, some people might think it's arrogant when you hearken back to how something today is similar to something that happened back in Richard J. Daley's time. But I think it is nice to have a frame of reference. And unfortunately, in the news business, too many people move around. And so people don't have that experiential history for a real long time.
You sitting in the seat that you sit in as the moderator of Chicago Week in Review, I mean, you are getting a steady diet of Chicago news. I mean, every single Friday you are putting out 15, 20, 25 stories that your panels are talking about. You know, and I don't think it's arrogance at all, but the idea to look back and to talk about covering in the same way in 1978 the news of Chicago like you are in 2017. Has the city changed? I mean, do you see the same stories? Is it kind of like looking through the Matrix where you're like, it's the same cycle of stories that just keep coming back and keep coming back?
In many ways, it is exactly that. But in some ways, it's different. Look, the city's population has changed. The innovation, the politicians are not nearly as open as they used to be. They're very, very cautious. There's lots and lots of barriers to get to them. They feel that just by issuing a statement, they're accessible. So in many ways, it's much more battened down. But in terms of what goes on with the corruption, it just takes on, the faces change, but they're still all going to jail. The federal trials continue. The violence is upticked enormously.
Well, you're a good guy to ask this question. I mean, there'd be an argument in the news or from people in Chicago that say, is the violence uptick or is the media now covering violence? Meaning, you know, now it's every day and it's everything there. But in 1978, there were more murders in Chicago. We just weren't talking about it.
It's true. I mean, part of it is, but I do think it's upticked. I think it's upticked that there are more incidents. We tend to always look at the murder rate, and you're right. Back in the 70s, there were more murders, but also there was less good medical care and response. So a lot of these people who died then
aren't
might
dying
be saved.
Now, right,
you
right.
know, and what's happened is you're right. We do tend to cover it more often, than we did then and give it more time and space. It's more time. It's more electronic. It's not the newspapers as much.
Right.
I mean, you can compress a whole night's television news into a half a column in a newspaper, and sometimes they do that, and yet it's the full newscast.
Right.
And one of the reasons they gravitate toward is what I was saying before. It's cheap and it's easy to do.
Joel, you mentioned earlier that your client's Tom Skilling. You have other clients. You are a media represent media personalities on television with your law firm, and you've been doing that for four decades as well. And I want to ask you just, you know, because they used newscasters on the 10 o'clock news. I mean, they were Chicago celebrities. They still are, but I mean, their paychecks sort of said that they were, and the way that they were, there were so many cases of people making millions of dollars doing this work. The economics have changed. You've talked about the newscasts and the news broadcasts going cheap, easy, trying to do it on. We've talked about the audiences diminishing. How does, from your vantage point, from an economic standpoint, when it comes to how the newscasts and the news business works in Chicago, has it diminished? Have we seen an economic downturn when it comes to the news business?
Well, you know, there is unquestionably an economic downturn when you go year to year. But like when I'll be negotiating a contract, someone will say, do you realize our sales are not even what they were in 1960? And I'd say, yeah, but in 1960, you were making a lot of money. So yeah, I assume you're still making a lot of money. But there was this, everybody thought it was a license to print money to be in this business, because each year the advertising rates and number of advertisers
went
and
up,
viewers
right.
would expand. And now we are in a period of contraction. And like I said before, you know, it's so dispersed. There's so much competition to get these advertising dollars. So I guess the answer in a word is yes, we are in a contracting period.
Is it hard for you to negotiate for your clients knowing that? Meaning that every time you're going to talk to a news director or general manager, they're going to say, I don't have the numbers I had. I don't have the advertising dollars. We're going to have to take a significant cut. All the kind of things that companies will say to the talent. Is it hard, I mean, to figure out what's true and what's not? When
it would be hard if you believed it all. But just like the agent may exaggerate the worth of the client, they may exaggerate the depth of the depression. But the fact is that people who are stars and have recognition and market credibility are still entitled to good payment. And you know, you mentioned Skilling. I mean, all the research shows that loads and loads of people watch WGN because of him. I happen to represent Mark Giangreco and Allison Rose. There's two other examples of people who are, you know, actually bring in viewers
right.
and keep viewers.
They're the face of their
right.
news, right.
But it's totally different for somebody who's a run-of-the-mill reporter who comes to work. And it used to be where if you take one from Channel 5 and put them at Channel 2, you know, someone would give them a $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 raise. That's really not happening,
that's not happening
anymore, because it's pretty hard to say I'm watching because of Reporter X. It's the front people.
Joel Weissman, you know, as we said, coming up in January, you're going to celebrate 40 years of hosting Week in Review on Channel 11. I mean, what is that? And I kind of asked you right at the beginning of the show, and I like to sometimes ask the same question at the end. Now that you think about it, we've had a chance to reflect on your career for an hour. What does that mean to you? What does it mean that you have had the consistency of broadcasting here in Chicago for 40 years?
Well, you know, I take it as a great honor, and it's an honor beyond just being on the air, because I've enjoyed a lot of trust at Channel 11, because I pick the topics that we discuss. And no one's ever told me, you must discuss this, you can't discuss that. A producer invites the guests. But I think that trust is beyond description. It's that great. And I'm very, very flattered to have it and honored to have it. And, of course, I'm honored that people seem to like what we do. We've been on for an awfully long time, and we have a very loyal and sometimes actually expanding audience, depending on what day it is. And it's somewhat comforting that there is a actual market for what we're doing. People actually appreciate it.
Yeah.
And tune in.
Joel Weissman, the host and senior editor of Chicago Tonight Week in Review, which has been on the air for 39 years, 40 years in January. Joel, also a lawyer, represents media in town. Joel, thanks so much for being my guest at the big table. Really appreciate it.
Boy, I really appreciate you letting me toss out all my biases and do a bragorama here. Thank you so much, Justin.
All right. Fun stuff. Joel Weissman. There you go. I love that show, man. That's one of my favorite shows. I don't get a chance to see it because we're always on the air.
Yeah.
But there's always great to be able to see. I always like it because the panelists that are on are always like the sometimes business, you know, writer. And you're like, oh, that's what that guy looks like. I've read that guy's work.
I was thinking about like, oh, we should have like had him come in and then have you and like three other people behind
interview
the desk.
Him.
Yeah. Have a panel interviewing him.
Well, at least we did get to the bottom that he does not kick people. Roe said at the beginning, oh, you know how he gets people to shut up? He kicks them under the table.
Yeah,
you
that's the
right
headline.
Here, he said unequivocally, mm-hmm. That does not happen. I don't know. You know, maybe I've been on the show a couple times, and I'm going to be on the show again coming up here on Friday, which is awesome, before this even happened. I'm going to be on. But my favorite is the one time I was in, Eddie Arruza was in for Joel, and I did the, and I was up there and I was having fun because David Greising was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I forgot who else was on the other side, but I knew the guys. I know Greising. I used to work with him when we were working before I was producing him. And, you know, there's a real stoic kind of formal vibe to that show sometimes where they just kind of.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't really pick up on it. Like, I was in one of those modes where I'm like, I'm going to try some bits. I think I told this story before, but I was like, I made a joke. And I think either they cut it out or they don't cut out. They just kind of, like, cut around. But I just made the joke. I'm like, I'm sorry, I didn't get the memo that we were supposed to wear our dad ties. Because Greising had, like, the goofiest green, blue, swirl-type tie that he had on.
Uh-huh.
Nobody laughed. It was like Bike the Drive all over again.
Felt flat. Like,
It did. But it was,
that's a tough crowd.
But it's a good joke, right? If you're watching at home and maybe you're like, why is this so? I'm like, you know, was I supposed to wear my dad? I didn't know David was bringing the dad tie in.
I don't know. I'd be watching it and I'd be like,
who's
this guy trying to make jokes?
They had me on to be like, Lollapalooza's on this week. Justin, what can we expect from Lollapalooza?
Was it really?
Yeah, it was like that kind of thing.
The Red Hot Chili Peppers are probably playing.
Well, the Red Hot Chili Peppers are kind of, thanks for asking. The Red Hot Chili Peppers. Well, it's a really important issue, the festival, 4 days. Lots of great music. Music's going to be great. And there's food. There's so much food. Yesterday, I told you the story about, and I want to do this. Maybe I'll save it tomorrow because we're running out of time here, but. Yesterday, my son's fourth grade class came in and in the morning for Steve Cochran's show, and they did a field trip. And I got home late last night, and this morning, Pete, you'll love this, my son comes in. He goes, hey, I got something for you. And it was a huge pile of thank you letters. Like the kid.
From the
kid? Yeah, the kid. That was like what they did. They don't really do school anymore. It's June. Even though they got to be there till June 20th, they're watching movies and doing thank you letters. But
the Comey stuff tomorrow.
So let me just I'm going to read a couple of these. The best I pulled the best ones out. Right. Dear Chicago Tribune staff.
Oh, very formal.
I'm not sure that's who we are, but that's okay. I enjoyed my visit there. I appreciate how hard you work and keep people updated. See you soon. There's a picture of the Tribune Tower that they drew, and it says anonymous. Okay, that's one. This one says, thank you. All right. It says, thank you, yay, WGN, world's greatest news. Thank you. Thank you for your tour at WGN building. It was so much fun. My favorite part was the couches.
Where are the couches?
Couches upstairs in the seventh floor.
Ah.
That's I mean, they were on the radio. They were on Cochrane. They got to do a bunch of stuff, but their favorite part was the couches. Here's one. Dear WGN, thank you for letting us come to your radio station. My favorite part was when you made really funny jokes, like the time when you said, here is the hardest task, drinking in front of the kids. There was a mixologist on in Cochrane. Sincerely, blah, blah, blah. And then there's a picture of a face with a funny, and then it says, quote, the purple marker is smelly. Because it was written in purple marker. So you got that. And then my favorite one, this is probably I've got to give this to Cochrane. This is my favorite one. Dear old man Steve.
That's what?
And then it says in parentheses, sorry if that's spelled wrong. And I'm like, okay. So how are your drinks? Sir, were they good or bad? I always wondered about what alcohol tastes like.
Uh-oh.
Is it spicy? Does it hurt your throat? Never mind. Now to the real letter. Thank you for letting us come to WGN Studio. It was cool, and I hope I got on TV. Picture on back, and then there's a picture at the back that says, Eyewitness News Rules.
It does. Eyewitness it does. News Rules. Oh, man, that's fantastic.
I just love that. Old Man Steve.
Did he hear somebody say it? Old Man Steve?
Oh, we're so old, but yeah. Or maybe that's just anyone over the age of 30 is Old Man Steve.
Yeah. That's great.
All right, coming up, Jim O'Hare is going to be here. Stay with us. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com. All right, if you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio. Coming up, Jim O'Hare. I got another one for you here, Rob. Listen to this one. This is one of the fourth grade field trip. They came over and did the field trip yesterday.
Okay.
And this is the last one I'll read. This is it doesn't say who it's from. But it's got an awesome beginning. It says WGN Radio, and then it says Justin in color, which is really nice. So they took some time on this one, mm-hmm. right? And then it said The Radio Man. And then it says, Justin, your work is so funny because you have to talk. And you're working good. And then that's about it.
Love it.
So there you go.
You know what? To the point.
They make a strong argument, too. I am working good.
Done.
And I would say that is funny that I talk.
You better put those away before they get there. Probably get submitted, and you'll see them in the paper. They'll be submitted as columns and fill out the.
That's right. Fill it out.
Hey, we'll use this.
Yeah, right. Then they're going to see it, and they'll be like, oh. These are nice, though. There's some good artwork. There's some not so good artwork. I'm not going to lie. There's some stuff where I'm like, you know, you don't want to trace over. Like, there's a lot of. Anyway, I really appreciate the kids doing that. That's nice. You know, I mean, it's glad they got to do a field trip to come over here and see a Trib Tower. Sure. And Marlene did a wonderful tour. Marlene Wells here. And she was great in the sense that she showed some of the cool stuff in the lobby and other places in the building. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. I didn't even know this.
That's a beautiful building, man.
I was like, this is so interesting. Don't touch that. That's get your hands off of that.
I'm just wondering if on the bus ride over, all the kids were asking, what in the hell is a radio station?
Well, you know, a lot of them thought it was TV.
Oh.
And I recognized that halfway through it because the kids were like, where's the TV? And I'm like, and so they really cared about, they had a great time. But what they, you know, here up in, you know, where you're at, Rob, we're on the webcam, the web stream. So they went into the traffic booth. And they were able to see themselves on the traffic camera.
Oh.
And so they spent an inordinate amount of time in there. Like, it was like, all right, guys, you want to see where the, you want to see the tech? You want to see where we do the engineering in the back? No. We just want to make funny faces in the black and white web stream traffic cam. So that was essentially it. So. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, my guest tonight is an actor who grew up right here in Lansing, Illinois. Jim O'Hare is known to many from his role as Jerry or Terry or Gary or whatever. Whatever. The hit NBC sitcom Parks and Rec, of course, aired for 7 seasons. O'Hare is starring in the new independent film called Middleman, which is hitting select theaters this weekend. In the dark comedy, O'Hare plays a CPA who heads west to fulfill his dream of being a stand-up comedian in Las Vegas. It's a comedy, but the themes about chasing fame and, in some cases, reality go beyond the laughs. Jim O'Hare's back in town, a place he spent some time back in the late 80s doing comedy and acting in theater, and he joins me tonight at the big table. Jim, thanks for being here.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here.
Well, so, I love it.
You know, let's get right into the film.
Yeah.
And we can talk about your time in Chicago. I'd love to talk about it. But, you know,
there's a lot of police reports that do not go by them at all. I'm sorry. It's a lot of BS.
You don't have a mugshot up on the front of the Tribune. But, you know, what drew you to the script? Because this is a departure for what you've done, but at the same time, kind of up your alley.
As far as doing a role, because this is, for those who know nothing about the film, I call it a dark comedy. It's incredibly dark, but there's a lot of laughs. But I did 7 years of Jerry Gergich or Terry, Barry, Larry, Gert, whatever the hell they called me for 7 years. And it was great, like literally a life-changing experience. If they called me tomorrow, I'd be back. I mean, I love those people, and I loved everything. But, you know, you kind of can get boxed in Hollywood, like they say. So, you know, Jerry was this lovable, laughable, you know, sad sack of a guy. So this script comes along, and it's dark, and it's about a guy who it kind of begins very Jerry-like, and things just take a bad turn from one bad decision, one horrible decision. Lenny picks up a Lenny Freeman is the character's name. Yes. He picks up a hitchhiker, and it changes his whole world.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, there's something about the concept of the film, and the film, the big themes about it have to do chasing fame. And dealing with, you know, trying to move from one place to another or leave your life behind, something. In this case, Lenny's a CPA.
And an innocent, a true innocent. He had lived with his mother. He had never left home. 50 years old. I'm pretty sure he was a virgin. Like, I truly believe he was an innocent, like didn't know the ways of the world. The comedy, his mother thought he was hysterical because all they would do are bits from the old,
right.
You know, Stiller and Mira and Burns and Allen and you know, Charlie McCarthy, like, you know, and Edgar Bergen. So they didn't know the real world. They based it on that world. Yeah. And they imagine sitting with your mother memorizing these routines in this day and age. It's kind of nutty. So the mother dies, and he kind of fulfills the dream she had always had because she always said he was funny. Well, he's not funny. He's not entertaining. He's nothing. He's a bore. But he doesn't know this because mommy's told him. It's like these people on American Idol who come off after they're awful and they're screaming. The parents are out there. That was the best audition I've ever heard. And at home, we're like, holy crap, was that garbage. You know, because you take what your parents say. So, yeah. So Lenny heads off to Vegas to try to do it. And fame is alluring. I mean, I always compare. Look at these reality people, what they will do. What people will do to get on television is crazy.
And that's really what this movie's about.
Yes.
About what the price you pay for fame.
What
and,
price will you pay?
Right.
Yes. What is your ultimate price?
And for you as an actor, a comedian who's been in L.A. and done several projects in Hollywood, I mean, how does a role like that about an innocent who's chasing fame and has to make choices and do what he has to do to be famous, how does that resonate with you?
It resonates. I'd like to think I wouldn't chase it as hard as Lenny chased it, but I do live in Los Angeles. I'm around people all the time who would do anything to have some sort of, you know, I'm an actor. It's in my heart. It's in my soul. Some people say, well, I just want to be a star. I don't even know what that is. I don't know what that, I guess that's a Kardashian thing, you know, because people see these people who did, you know, there was a sex tape that became famous and then that one after the other, they became famous. They don't seem to do anything. I don't know. But, you know, people want that. It blows my mind.
And, you know, it's not a new concept because even in the film, you address the concepts of some of the heroes, of Lenny's heroes. And Lenny will run into some people and they say, well, you really want to know about X or Y, this comic. You know, he was a bad guy.
Oh,
reality and fame plays
Fatty
a big part.
Fatty Arbuckle is the perfect example, and this is he's an old time comedian who most people, even my age, I'm almost 30, and the laugh at home is because I'm 55 and they're looking at a man who looks like a nightmare. But the fact that, you know, Fatty Arbuckle did a terrible thing one night, and this is before the internet, and it still ruined his career. You know, it literally ruined his career. It's just so interesting. Some people think that they can do no wrong and they will just continue. Lenny finds himself in a situation where this doesn't reveal too much about the film, but as bodies pile up, the funnier he gets.
Well, that was the thing. The bad decisions or the bad things that are happening around Lenny, they seem to almost become fuel for him to get that
Absolutely.
Fame. People start laughing. People start liking the things as he goes down this dark path.
Yep.
So there's something about the idea that it doesn't always end up like Fatty Arbuckle. There are things that people do bad things and they find fame regardless.
Right. We did a screening for comics last week. My concern was, as an actor, did I pull off the stand-up routines? And there is a moment, and you know, it's hard for me to judge it because that's a big head on that screen. It's just too much, but apparently it works. And there is a moment, and I can recognize this, where Lenny is doing his routine. Now, he's only funny because he's relaying information that people have died that he's been involved in. And it's a whole thing. You have to see this movie. It's really great and dark. But you can see the glint in his eyes when he realizes these people are laughing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, they're laughing for me. And then he pulls the microphone from the stand, like, here we go.
Here we go.
What price? People have died for him to say, here we go. So I love it.
Well, it's a great movie. It's called Middleman. It's in select theaters this weekend in Chicago as well.
Yeah.
Jim O'Hara is in studio with me tonight. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more with Jim about his life in Hollywood and also his days back here in Chicago, Lansing,
Chicago,
Illinois.
Chicago, Chicago.
Stay with us.
Toddlin' Town.
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Jim O'Hara. We're talking about the film Middleman, which is his new independent film, which is in theaters, select theaters, this weekend. Of course, Jim, known for his work on the NBC sitcom Parks and Rec, where he played Terry, whatever. Jim, this is kind of, this is a major turn that we were talking about in the first segment, just the idea of you doing something that's different than what you are known for on Parks and Rec. How do you prepare yourself for working in this kind of thing, an independent film, and all the things that go with it that are different than the network experience?
Well, the first thing you have to do when you do a film like this is know that it's going to be a tough shoot, because when you do an indie, there is no money. I'd been 7 years on Parks, where we have big trailers, and like, oh, what would I like for lunch today? Oh, gosh, I haven't had sushi in like 4 days. Maybe I'll have, you're spoiled rotten. It's wonderful, and wardrobe people, you're spoiled rotten. And in that case, we just also happened to all love each other and have the greatest time. So it was laughter from morning till night. So now you go and do an indie where you got, we crowdfunded $150,000, and then some producers put in some other money. So it was a very small budget. We had to get a lot done. We shot in the desert.
Yeah.
And it was a role that I suspected I could pull off. The director and writer wrote it for me in mind over 10 years ago. So he suspected I could pull it off, but until you start doing it, you don't know. And so I felt the weight of the world on me,
really?
Because we had done all this, and now what if I can't step up? What if I can't hit it out of the park?
As an actor, is that normal? Is that a normal feeling for us listening at home? For all the parts that you play, is there always going to be a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of doubt into whether or not you can, quote, pull it off?
Here's a perfect example. Last September, I did a Soderbergh film that comes out in August called Logan Lucky. Channing Tatum, Daniel Craig, Katherine Heigl, Hilary Swank, Seth MacFarlane, Adam Driver. This whole thing. I'm on the plane heading to Atlanta, and I had the panic attack of my life,
really?
Thinking they have made a horrible mistake. I'm going to get to the set tomorrow, and Soderbergh is going to go, "Who's that?" Like, why is that large man staring at me? What's happening? We're racked with insecurity.
Yeah.
It's the worst. And then, of course, I get there. Within 10 minutes, it was all wonderful, and I had.
What do you do? What do you do to handle that? When you're going through that every time.
A friend of mine, I'll say her name, Marianne Mutterlally. I love her. She said to me one day, because we were talking about that, I think nerves are good.
Right.
I'm always nervous before things.
Yeah, right.
But healthy nerves. Some are debilitating, and then that's not good. Like, I'm doing Seth Meyers next week. I know before I walk out there, I'll have the jitter stomachs and blah, blah, and then it'll be fine. That's healthy nerves. But she said to me, she goes, when you show up, are you going to do the best job you can do? I said, well, yeah, of course. She goes, then what are you nervous about? And if you think about it, am I going to do the best I can do? Yes, I would never show up unprepared. So that is what has learned to really help calm me down. I always tell any young actor when they, do little talks here and there, and I said, just always be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you won't goof up. Stuff happens,
right.
And sometimes it doesn't work out. I've gone into auditions so prepared, and you get in that room and something throws you. All of a sudden they're sitting, some major celebrity you didn't know was going to be in the room. And you're like, hi. And then that gets in your head, or you hear someone else's audition. You're like, oh, that was good. Oh, God, well, I've made all the wrong choices. So you can goof up, but at least I've never shown up unprepared.
You mentioned the word choice, and I think a lot of people who might watch Parks and Rec or watch this movie, they think of your performance as effortless, or the idea that you are reading some lines and you're an actor and you get into the character. But a lot of the character of Lenny, there are choices to be made,
yes.
Not just by you, but the writer and the director. How important is it to recognize the choices that need to be made?
Right, because there's in many occasions, there's no one right choice.
Right.
Especially as an acting. Your greatest acting teachers will, before you finish a scene, you'll have done it in every direction. You'll have anger, you'll have sadness, you'll have laughter with the same material. So, so there's no, it's what your choice is. But what worked for this film in particular was a couple of things. One, Ned Crowley, who wrote and directed it, knows me. I've known him. We did comedy together in the 80s, trained at Second City. And he knows my garbage. And by garbage, I mean my actor tricks. We all, every actor has them. Things that you're comfortable doing so it feels natural, right, blah, blah, right. blah. He knows too much, okay. you know, which was good and bad. I always tell this story because it was perfect example. We were, my first day of shooting was Tracy Walters, an old character actor from Repo Man, and he's wonderful. We're doing a jail's house scene. Right, sitting right. in the jail. I'm on the floor, and I've been arrested. And we would do a take, and Ned would go, okay, great, but Jim, I need less. Okay. We do another take. Great. Half. Half. I feel like I'm barely doing anything right now. So the next day I went to Ned and I said, dude, I am terrified now. Like, I don't think I'm bringing what we need for this film. I feel like I'm... Anyway, he goes, let me show you something. And he showed me the dailies from that. And I was like, you're right.
You're right.
This is exactly where Lenny needs to be.
Lenny,
and so he was on me the whole film.
And I feel like that might be what I mean by choice, because you don't go... I mean, he wants to be a stand-up.
Yeah.
But he's not hammy. He's not...
No,
you
doesn't know enough
and,
to be hammy.
Yeah, exactly. And at the same time, in his real life, when he's off the stage, he's very quiet. He's very reflective.
He's a kind, small... Not small physically, but he's a simple, simple man.
And you get to the point where you recognize, as I recognize as a viewer, that, I mean, there is some acting chops that go into doing less. Like in the idea
yes,
of...
Yes, yeah. there's totally... And I give Ned so much credit for this performance because... Again, he knew me. When he wrote this, we had no power. I was a working actor in L.A. He runs an ad agency in Chicago, but no one knew who the hell any of us were. And then because of Parks, we got some notoriety, and then he got a call saying, if you can attach O'Hare to this, we'll do this script, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. Next thing you know, we're making a film. So he kept it grounded. Where my work came in, Lenny, from the beginning of the film to the end, there is a breakdown that happens. Yeah. The thing when you shoot a film, actually when you shoot almost anything, you're not doing it in order. It's not like I begin day one and do the first scene.
Actually, the scene you were talking about in day one, it happens late into the film.
Yeah. There's
way after where
that very end, you know that nightmare that happens at the end?
Yeah.
That was day three or four. So, I mean, that's...
Interesting.
For me, because I wanted this breakdown. If you do it too soon, it doesn't work. If you do it too late, it doesn't work. So that was my focus, was, Ned, you be on me about the performance, how bigger, and all this stuff. But I needed in my head to know where Lenny was before. I don't want to give too much away because there is a huge thing that happens at the end. That.
But let me ask you just about that concept of the actor, and people recognize this in a film. You're going out of sequence. You're
totally,
shooting stuff that might be at the end of the movie, and then the beginning is later. How do you, as an actor, especially the main character, where the movie is really just about you?
Oh, I tell people, if you don't like me, do not go to this film. There are like three scenes I'm not in, and I don't blame you if you don't want. I mean, I get it. This big fat head on a big screen is terrifying, so I get it. But yeah, if you don't like me, do not go.
How do you make sure that you're respecting and that you're doing the part right if you're doing it so far out of sequence?
It's totally hard. That's, to me, the toughest part of the whole process. Mm-hmm. It'd be different if, especially in this film, if Lenny began as Lenny and ended as Lenny. Lenny has a huge transformation in this film.
As any good film would.
Right. Lenny begins very much like Jerry from Parks.
Right.
Even simpler, but still just sweet and nice and fine. And then, you know, there's a lot of stuff happens. And so it's me and the director. And, you know, Ned and I, when we started this, because we've been friends since 85, and we said, this can't be more important than the friendship, because it can't. We've been through each other's families and deaths and wonderful event marriages, you know. So it couldn't be more important than that. And it never became. But yet there were times when Ned would give me a direction, I'd go, okay. And then sometimes I'd go back at him, and I know he was thinking, okay, you know. But it's good collaboration.
That's good chemistry, right?
Because not everyone is, yes, okay, thank you, thank you, we'll do it your way.
Especially
you
know. If the power is off. If you're an actor and the director has a lot of, I mean, I doubt you can be that much chemistry with a Soderbergh or others. Where,
exactly. No, but I'll tell you this. Some actors are not director friendly. I love direction. I love it. I am insecure. So if they give me direction, or if nothing else, I want to be told, that's what I'm looking for.
Right.
You know, even if, because a lot of directors, their theory is, if I don't say anything, you're doing it fine, which is true. Because I'm not saying after every take, oh, good boy, Jimmy. Good boy. You're a good boy. No, but it is nice. Like, you want to know you're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Directors, if a good director has a vision, you know, they've seen this scene in their head and everything. So I love direction. Now, I've worked with actors who want...
Who do not.
We're like, oh, the director's coming over. Oh, God, here we go, here we go. I'm okay with it. So everyone is different. You know, but also some people... There's actors who will stay in character, you know, for days on end. You can only call them that character. I'm an actor who can, you know, have a literally a crying scene, and they yell cut. I can go, what's for lunch? You know what I mean? Like, I... That's me, and it doesn't make me better or worse than anybody.
Let's take a break for tonight's news, and then what I want to do is ask you about where that comes from. You know, we'll talk about your days in Chicago,
cool.
80s, 90s, White Noise, Second City. Noise. Right, yeah. There you go. Jim O'Hare, my guest. His movie, Middleman, is in select theaters this weekend. Also, of course, played Jerry on the hit NBC sitcom Parks and Rec. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. It's a download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Jim O'Hare in studio, my guest at the big table. His film, Middleman, is out in select theaters now, an independent film where O'Hare plays a CPA who heads west to fulfill his dream to be a stand-up comedian, to be famous in Las Vegas. Of course, Jim O'Hare, known for his role of Jerry on the hit sitcom Parks and Rec on NBC, which aired for 7 seasons. Before that, though, and it was great to go through your bio, and see that you had a robust history in Chicago doing theater, doing comedy, not just at Second City with your own stuff, with an ensemble, White Noise. What's it mean for you to be back in Chicago with this movie in tow and being able to make the rounds?
It's amazing. I've been in L.A. now. It'll be 23 years in August, so it's been a long time. And when I left here, everybody said, because I left with a play that we had done here, and it was called Stumpy's Gang, and it became this cult. It had blood and puppets, and I was like, it would be a joke of, you know, I think people were betting if I'd have a heart attack because it was this crazy where I'm running anyway. But it did really well, and we thought, well, if there's ever a show crazy enough to go to L.A., let's try that. So we brought it to L.A. also to test the waters in L.A. Actors, it's the Mecca, you know. So we go, and as friends told me later, they knew I was never coming back, and I didn't. I thought we're going to go do this play. I'll do a pilot season.
Really?
And then come back to Chicago. It's my home. It's where I love. It's I love every. I lived in Wrigleyville. My God, what's not to love? They were right. I never left. I got a pilot the first season in a film. So I landed O'Hare Airport or Midway, and it's home. And I like L.A. Like a lot of actors, it's kind of cool to hate L.A. I like it. I have a home that I love, and I have a good life there. Chicago's still home. Like the home in your heart, you know what I'm saying?
What did you learn from working in theater and doing sketch and improv in Chicago? What did you learn? Take us back to 1989, 1988, when you were on stage here in Chicago.
Yeah, well, I learned to steal other people's material. I find that is a way to success. No, a couple things happened. I was a DJ first before I did any of this. WRINWLQI, Rensselaer, Indiana. Good morning. Anyway, how sad is that? Yeah. And here's what I would say. Jim O'Hare on the air in Rensselaer. Now, if you really piece it apart, it doesn't rhyme. But I thought I was so like, dude, yeah, you nailed that. Good for you. It was at a little station. When our prizes would be a six-pack of Pepsi. I mean, the whole thing was heartbreaking when I look back. But through everything, it brought me to Second City. And I know the first day I walked on stage at Second City and got my first laugh. Bingo. Something hit. And not that I ever thought it would pay my bills. Mm-hmm. I truly never did. But I knew I was going to do that. I needed to do that. That rings a bell. And then through there, I met 5 other people, like-minded, and we formed this group called White Noise. And we did, for the time, some really crazy stuff that was not being done here. We had animation involved. We'd run off a stage and turn into a cartoon. Now, granted, now that means nothing in this day. We're talking 19...
Yeah.
89, so a lot of
way ahead
ago.
Of its time.
Yeah, it was called Book of Blanche.
Even before Second City, you know, in the mid-90s, started to experiment with their form and try new things. So even to think about it 7 or 8 years before doing that kind of stuff was groundbreaking.
We really felt it was, and we had great people around us to make it all happen. And Ned Crowley, who turned out to be writing and directing Middleman, was one of them. And him and Pat Cannon, they're just brilliant writers. Like, people say, oh, you're a writer too. I'm not a writer. I'm a contributor. Like, I'm a good improviser because I can contribute. If things are rolling, I can jump in. But they can sit down with pen and paper and create comedy. I don't have that. I wish I did. But we became this tight-knit little group, and we did 4 shows. they would each one would run longer than the other one, and it was the days. It was the days when we look back. And I go from here tonight. I'm having dinner with one of them out in the burbs. We've all stayed close. But when I look back, the greatest time of your life, even though life is great now and it's wonderful, but the much more innocent time, we didn't care what people thought. We were doing our own thing. Like, we heard one night Second City was coming to see us. We're like, what is that all about? We don't even know what that means. You know, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, the big wigs, the Bernie Solins and all that kind of stuff. And then we're like, well, we just do what we do. It's all we do. So, and we all stuck together. Chicago was such a great place to try. I always tell people, I get it, graduate college, and people are like, oh, L.A. or New York. Come to Chicago. Do some storefront theater. Get with another group of people that think like you do. And put stuff up of your own. Because L.A. will always be there. New York will always be there. But Chicago is such a great training ground. There's so much good theater.
Are you surprised at how it's just exploded? I mean, you think of Second City now, there's thousands and thousands of kids that come through there, and I would only think 1989, probably less. Yeah. But the idea that even in L.A., from your perch and even playing Jerry on Parks and Rec, seeing so many more people trained in improv, trained in the Second City Chicago style, coming into Hollywood.
It's incredible because, you know, like Amy Poehler, you know, the lead in Parks, she created her and Matt Walsh and Matt Besser and Ian
Roberts.
Roberts created UCB. Well, in L.A., you can't get into a UCB show. I mean, they are lined up around the building. So improv has become this great, and it is a great training ground. Not that you always have to do improv. Like, the improv scares the hell out of me now because I'm so used to scripted material. But that's how I began. It's such a I'd be in classes with lawyers. It's a great way to learn to be in front of people and to think, you know, come on, got to think. You can't just wait around. Yeah, it's changed. Everybody and their brother has taken an improv class.
Right.
But it's great. Not everyone's going to have a career out of it. And the thing with L.A. is it's tough. You know, so many people go out there and it doesn't work out. And I have friends who are could run circles around me talent-wise, and for whatever reason, it didn't work out for them. Mm-hmm. You know, I am a character guy. That helps.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by a character?
Well, you know, I'm not going to be the Brad Pitt. I'm not going to get the, you know, romantic lead against Angelina Jolie, you know, though I should, but I'm not going to. No, you know, I can play the doctor, the lawyer, the neighbor, the, you know, you can do a bunch of
You get steady work from playing one-offs.
When I
stuff,
moved there and I can say very whatever miracle happened. I've never done anything else since I lived in L.A. other than live off of acting. So, but because I went there with a play that got so much attention, the one we brought Stumpy's being from here to there, it got just as much attention there.
So
all of a sudden, agents are calling me and managers, which is the toughest part, trying to get representation because people go out there. So it's tough. That being said, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. I would never tell anyone not to do it, but I always say go to Chicago first.
You know, it's interesting. We talk about this on the show a lot, you know, with actors and creative people. I mean, for you to say that you were able to go to Los Angeles and not a day outside of the acting profession, for you to be able to work.
Not that every day was great, and not that every year. I'd look at some years and go, ooh, I just scraped by this year, and then other years
we're good. We talk about, like, what kind of life you live. And you'll people who might be listening right now, those lawyers or accountants or other people who they have a steady job where they go 9 to 5, and in 2 weeks they get their paycheck.
Yeah.
And there's a certain protection and safety to it, even if they're not chasing a dream.
Yeah.
And being an actor, especially so, and with you, a 7 years gig on Parks and Rec,
unheard of nowadays.
It's an industry and a profession that's wrought with rejection.
Yes,
and talk about that. Talk about how you have to prepare yourself mentally that you're going to work on this job for 3 days, or then I'm going to work on it for 6 months. I mean, then you get 7 years, but the idea that it's not something where you clock in every day at the factory, and when you're done at 65, you retire with your pension.
Parks and Rec was canceled after season 4. I never knew that till after we were wrapped after 7 seasons. One day, the powers that be got on a plane in New York, and they canceled us when the flight began. By the time their flight was over, we were back on the schedule. You have no control over anything. But that being said, the gift of being able to make your living, it's something you love. Because I have friends who have high-powered jobs, and they don't love it. but they, it's good money, and their families are taken care of. So the old, it's an old expression, and I should look it up to see who said it, because I use it all the time, which is, if you love what you do, you never worked a day in your life. Yeah. So I always say, I have not worked a day since August 4th, 1994. I have not worked a day, because I've made my living as an actor. But it is, there are no guarantees. There, we would wait in May, it's when they do the upfronts. We would be all like, what's going on? This is before texting. What have we heard? Has anyone heard? Are we coming? Are we on the schedule? We never knew. And we were, I mean, Time Magazine called us at one point one of the best shows of all time. We won a Peabody Award. We did this. We did that. It doesn't matter. It's about numbers, money, how many people are in that cast, how much does it cost? You know, it's all dollar signs.
Right.
So there were no guarantees, and there are still no guarantees. Like, I'm so weird that I'm saying this, but I won an Emmy a couple weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Daytime, and that is so ridiculous, like beyond anything I ever expected. and I even said after that, like, it could all end tomorrow. It's the nature of the business. All of a sudden, they don't want the big, fat, funny guy. So I'm out, you know. So you ride it as long as you can. Parks, we're lucky we hit syndication.
Right.
So that helps when if you have a slower year, you might have a little couple of checks coming your way. But it's a ridiculous business. I mean, imagine we were canceled and then put back on the air
in one flight,
in the 5.5 hour flight from New York.
It
to
just shows how fickle the business is.
We could that day if they hadn't changed, we would have got a call saying, "Well, you guys are done," and that would have been 4 years. We would not have made syndication. I mean, it's crazy.
Jim, you know, when you think about, I want to take you back to that moment. We talked about getting on Second City stage and getting that laugh. And I thought automatically to the character of Lenny, who it's really, I mean, his whole thought is that it's easy. Like he's in the car and he's just listening to the tapes. He's like, this is going to be easy. I'm going to get on the stand-up. I'm going to be famous.
Mom said I was funny. Yeah,
he gets up there. It doesn't go as well. But as the movie goes on, he gets addicted a little bit to that laughter in a strange way, a little stranger than yours.
Yeah.
But talk about the idea of that power, that feel of being on a stage with the lights on and people laughing at the things that you're talking about.
Well, first of all, it's crazy the fact that people like me get on a stage. It's people's number one fear is public speaking. I think nothing of it. So you know something is wrong upstairs because I literally think nothing of it. Like if someone says, oh, go out there, you know, it's just great. It's great. We're crazy people. That being said, when I'm out there, and I don't do stand-up. I give stand-ups a lot of credit. It's a life I couldn't lead. My immediate next-door neighbor is a comic named Brian Posehn, who a lot of people will know who
great.
He is.
Yeah.
He's literally, and it's, oh boy, he works hard. It's the weekends. It's the travel. It's, you know, and he's got family, and it's a lot. I give stand-up so much credit.
And it's something you never think about. I never think of as a stand-up that they're working hard.
Oh, dude.
But they are, yeah.
The car picks him up on Thursday. He's got to leave to go to North Dakota or South Carolina or Atlanta, wherever the hell he's going, you know. It's hard, and he's a successful. There's the ones who are in their own cars, traveling in their Pinto from Illinois to Iowa to Wisconsin. You know, I mean, that's even, and they're not staying.
Right.
And you know, when I travel, I did the Soderbergh film. I'm at some Four Seasons, you know, in Atlanta. These guys aren't doing that. They're at the Motel 6 for $25 a night or whatever
it is.
God bless them. That's a tough. I think it's a tough job. I can be on stage and just chat. And you get the response from the people. I just love it. And it's certainly self-masturbatory because, you know, who else am I doing it for other than me, I guess? And hopefully they're being entertained with whatever that I'm doing.
Do you see it that way? There are some artists who will say, well, I have a role, and that role is to make people laugh, forget about their lives, forget about the things that are happening in the world, or remind them of things that are happening in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, do you see yourself as an entertainer, as an actor, having a role in the society that you play up to, or is it self-masturbatory?
That's a tricky question. I don't feel I owe anybody anything, and I'm an actor since I'm like a stand-up, really. There is pressure. Make me laugh.
Yeah.
Like, no one looks at me and says, make me laugh.
Right.
You know, I like to if it works. But, I mean, I'm given a script and I learn my lines and I do it. But, you know, there is, I have a reputation of being a pretty nice guy and all this kind of stuff. So there are some days I don't feel like being such a nice guy. I'm exhausted or whatever's going on.
Right.
So I guess you always have to turn it on, even sometimes when you don't want to. But I think that's life. That's everybody.
I'm sure you're here.
My God, there must be days you're like, oh, boy, if I have to do this
never,
again.
Never
happened. Other than this show, I think it's happened to everybody. No, not to Justin, though. No,
never.
No, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So maybe there's pressure there. But in general, I like talking to people and being. I'm a gregarious kind of guy, born that way. My parents were that way. So it is what it is. I don't feel the pressure, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Or maybe I do, and tonight I'll rethink the whole thing and put a gun
in
my
mouth. Glad.
Thanks
well,
for bringing
Thank
that
you.
Up. Thank
there we
you.
Go. That's what I'm good at. Jim O'Hare, the longtime actor from Chicago, from Lansing, Illinois. The movie Middleman is in select theaters this
It'll
weekend.
It'll be River East.
It's going to be at River East?
River East,
great.
Yes.
Great theater, right yes, around the yes, corner yes. from here. Jim, thanks so much for coming in. Congrats
My
on
pleasure.
The success.
So much.
And
I love these one-on-ones where you really get to talk.
Yeah, and awesome, it, awesome that you get to come back with this movie, too.
Yeah, thank you. Very happy.
It's time for Swap Meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure. Like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold. There's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam.
That's me.
Yeah, it's Swap Meet time. 312-981-7200. Oh, what a wondrous segment here on Wednesday nights here on The Download. This is a segment where we ask you what you got in your attic, what you got in your basement, what's hanging on your wall sometimes, and what other treasures you may have in your house and what you want to brag about and see what they're worth. Greg Flam is at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter, and he joins us every Wednesday. Great to see you, Greg. How are
you? Good to see you, Justin. Always fun.
Pete was talking earlier tonight about concert t-shirts because we had that all last, towards the end of the swap meet last week, we started talking about concert t-shirts.
A lot of calls on that.
And we were trying to decipher the difference between, and can you tell, the difference between one that you buy at the concert. It's like, that's the hot stuff.
Right.
You know, you go see the Spin Doctors, you want to get it from.
Right. There are certain brands of shirts.
Or the Rose Records, where you go in and you get the one in the back that's a little bit off-brand. It's not the same.
Right.
Can you tell the difference?
There are people who can tell. I personally can't without some research, though.
Oh.
So, but there are people who know the difference.
I was
they're
hoping you'd have
that.
A trained eye.
Yeah, sorry. Disappoint you on that.
You tell which Beastie Boys shirt
right.
is real, which one's the knockoff.
Yeah, no, there are ways to tell, that's right. for sure.
My brain just goes. Are we for the next hour? I'm gonna read off random 80s or 90s bands.
Okay.
For concert t-shirts.
And I'll do some research on those brands.
All right. 312-981-7200. The number to call. Greg, you had a big week. What this is?
Oh,
I mean,
this was
prime time, right? This is the
it
prime
is,
time
it
for
is prime
garage sales, for flea markets,
buying
for
and
estate
selling.
Sales.
Yep. It's prime time now till like Labor Day or October.
Do you bring a jug of like Gatorade with you?
Oh man, yeah. I train. It's like it's like Rocky III. You know, it's like
the best Rocky.
Yeah, right. It was, right. And I love it. I love this time of year because now, this time of year, like today, garage sale in LaGrange I was at. I mean, it doesn't have to be Friday or Saturday or Sunday. It could be a Tuesday, Wednesday, you know. So I love it. You know?
All right. I love it. So what'd you find this week?
Oh, man, I hit the mother load of these.
Oh, yeah?
Okay, so 1961, Mark's Toys, a big toy company, made these Disney toys called Disneykins. And they, to kind of describe it, they're almost like miniature cake toppers almost, but they weren't cake toppers.
They're
they
little,
were collectibles
they're
and they're very little, maybe an inch and a half high.
Aww.
And they made them for every Disney story, Peter Pan, everything.
Which one is that?
And this one is actually
like
one of the four. There's a like Holy Grail, four of these. And I actually found this one's Bongo the Bear. And it's worth about $125.
That little thing is?
This little thing, yeah.
Wow.
And I found about 15 to 20 various ones. I have four of them that will be sold for over $100 each. So I was that thrilled. And what I paid for them came to about $3. I mean, I filled like a
Come
little
on.
Shoebox of stuff, and the guy just said $7. Get
so
out of here.
So the Comey watching party's at Greg's house tomorrow. So
yeah, well, once I sell
spread.
These, I'll invite everyone.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It might take a week.
There's
or
always
so.
An excuse. Right?
And I brought, you know, some other signs, like this porcelain sign here. Ooh. It's an actual reproduction, but it's done very well. And it's
Oldsmobile.
Yeah, this one's Oldsmobile service. And, you could tell by the weight and, you know, like for quality-wise, if you can almost
so
bend it.
So that's like
it,
a window dressing kind
yeah,
of thing?
Yeah, it's kind of a sign. You know, they
okay,
mount
yeah,
it,
yeah.
you know, and the way you could tell is usually by the weight or, if you know, if it looks flimsy, if it's going to bend, it's a newer reproduction and it's not worth as much. This one's probably worth about $80, and I got it for $10 at a garage sale. And then, you know, to continue with the Disney theme, I brought these platters that people collect. These are like from the 70s,
oh, yeah,
Future World, Epcot
Center.
I mean, yeah, I'm all about the 70s. Kitsch. I'm all about that. I love that stuff. So whenever I can find this funny stuff, I got
an Epcot. And when you got an Epcot plate, you can do no wrong.
Right. I mean, Epcot. And, I got the Mickey one, of course. This one's kind of
Mickey.
Cool. This one's like this Walt Disney World kind of with the state of Florida.
Map, yeah,
with some map of some stuff. But, yeah, it's the kitschy stuff that I really like.
I love it. All right. That is a good haul.
Yeah, it was a good week.
Oh, my gosh.
Buying and selling, yeah.
No wonder you got such a nice shirt on today.
Nice shirt, yeah. Right.
That's a lot of good stuff. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking concert T-shirts tonight. We're talking Disney paraphernalia.
Whatever they want to call.
Oldsmobile services, and whatever you'd like.
Yeah,
I love the swap meet in the sense that a lot of times the first person that calls in or texts in will say, I've got this World War II paraphernalia, and then it's just
the rest of the show.
That's all it is for the rest. But it can be anything. I had a question. I have this. It's a Sports Illustrated from 1999 maybe.
Okay.
I realize it's almost 20 years old now. Of Dennis Rodman in an L.A. Lakers jersey. That's it.
Sports Illustrated?
Yeah, I kept it because I was a big Bulls guy, and I had that one, and it showed him, like, is Dennis back? And the article, like, 2 minutes later, he was fired.
Yeah.
But he was on the cover of that thing, and then I was telling Pete, oh, I got this cool thing. He's like, you should tell Greg. That's a good swap meet. I'm like, yeah, maybe I'm a millionaire.
Right. Unfortunately,
doesn't
about
worth.
Anywhere from $2 to $10 is what that issue goes for. I've got something cool, Dennis Rodman. Do you remember the Hypercolor shirts that when you touch them? Come
right.
on.
Who are you talking to?
Okay, I forgot.
I love that shirt.
I forgot.
I got a slew of those. Go ahead.
I have the Dennis Rodman one of that.
There's a Dennis
mint.
Rodman one?
Yeah, mint. This thing is like still got the tag
so
on it.
So he's got like a Dennis Rodman?
It's Dennis Rodman's face and his hair changes colors with your body heat.
Great.
And yeah, that turned out. I had it listed for a while. No one bought it, but it's like I'm sticking to $100 on that thing.
That's great.
That's like rock concert shirt and sports like together, right?
And
there.
Hypercolor,
right? And Hypercolor, yeah. And Hypercolor alone, if you have those shirts, they're worth some decent money.
Hypercolor, so just so disrespected in the annals of
ahead of its time
American clothing. I mean, it really is. Mm-hmm. To this day, I don't know how that technology is not used more.
Right.
Greg Flamm at DuPage Picker, 312-981-7200. You can call, you can text, you can brag about what you got, and we can evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. That's coming up. Stay with us. It's a swap meet here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Greg Flamm in the building at DuPage Picker. We are evaluating your memorabilia, your junk, if you will. Gross. 312-981-7200. All right, let's get to some of these. I'm excited tonight. We got a lot of texts coming in. We got some people on the phone as well. Why don't we start with 708's got a question. There's a couple questions tonight.
Okay.
They're really taking on you're taking on an expert role
here. All right.
They collect baseball cards, video cartridges. How are the die-cast 1/18th scale, quote, movie cars as an investment?
I'm not sure on the movie ones, but the 1/18th scale cars in general can go as high as 600
plus. What does that
plus.
Mean? Like little guys?
Yeah, they're like scale, you know, they scale it to an actual car. So it's like 1/18th the size of a real car. There's like 124, 164 scale. So you got to put that. If you're going to sell, you have to definitely put the scale in there. But yeah, the 1/18th I've seen some for 630. You know, and they can be as low as $10. It depends on condition and which car it is and stuff like that. Ferrari has done very well with that.
Okay.
So if you have that. So,
all right, there you go. Another question 708 has, do manual typewriters have any value?
Yes, they do.
They do?
Yes. Some as high as $4,500. I just saw Shoals.
What do you mean? People are paying $4,500 for a typewriter?
Yeah, and some are only worth $30. So it depends on a brand, what year. But I
that sounds like a that is quite a wide gap.
Yeah,
of
and
value.
They're becoming hotter over the last, you know, like 6 months or so. I've noticed they're getting hotter, more so just as decoration. You know, obviously people aren't using them, so they're more just put them in the library.
I blame the hipsters.
Yeah, you know,
they're like ironic. They're like, I'm a writer. No,
right?
I'm not.
Yeah, it's,
but look, I got a manual typewriter.
Those antique shops. Yeah,
it's my coffee table.
Bringing in a Starbucks to work on your script,
right?
Now, that's a good bit.
There you go.
Yeah. I would invest the $30 in a manual typewriter for that bit.
We'll have to schedule that when you do your 1940s Cubs game. You have to schedule all that around.
A lot of bits. Yeah. It's right. 7 days of bits in Chicago. Yep. All right, let's see. I've got a 708 says, I have a Life magazine with the Beatles on the cover from 1968 and a 45 record of the Beatles featuring Tony Sheridan. What are they worth? I also have the original sleeve for the 45, all in good conditions. The Beatles featuring Tony Sheridan. I didn't know the Beatles did a lot of feature work, right? Would that be a thing?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard. I'm trying to remember who Tony Sheridan was.
Man, if the Beatles were if they were all around right now, it'd be like featuring Usher,
right?
Right. Beatles and the Biebs.
Some of the Life magazines, though, they're like in the $10-$20 range. They're not as high as you would think.
Is it because there's just a lot of those, and at that time, everyone wanted the Beatles on Life magazine kind of thing?
Yeah, but again, we've talked about this before. The advertisements in like Life magazine, Look magazine, Esquire, the ads alone are priceless, and some people are paying like $15, $20 just for a single-page ad.
So what I would do to that magazine if I were you, I'd just start cutting it up.
Yeah, just cut it up.
Just cut it up.
Shred it.
773 says, I have a collection of Walt Disney classic movies on VHS. I have over 20 of them.
Wow.
I mean, is that worth anything? Because I feel like that's another one of those things.
It filed that under Beanie Babies. There's the myth going around, like the black diamond on the spine.
Yeah, we talked about that.
So, just research that before you price that. But most of them are like 10 bucks a piece. The black diamond myth really circulated around VIPs. There was like 30 of these tapes of each movie that VIPs got, and you're probably not going to find them unless like an estate sale has them.
Right.
And those are the ones that might be 5,000 or 10,000.
Got it. 630 says, how about G.I. Joes from the 60s, the dolls?
Yeah, they're pretty high.
These are different than the action figures of the 80s. These are the big ones, right?
Yeah, like the 70s, late 60s, early 70s, all that stuff. The camper, the helicopter, the frogman, they had so many different series of that. And obviously, the more complete, the higher the price. Mm-hmm. If you have the box, it's much higher. If you don't, you know, the condition of the doll, you know, it's obviously, important as far as the value.
I'm a G.I. Joe guy from the 80s, right?
I was a big Jim guy.
Yeah, you're talking Destro, Cobra.
Yeah, Cobra for sure.
What was the cat who was a chameleon? I forgot his name. I think it was Chameleon, maybe.
Yeah,
the Shipwreck.
Mm-hmm.
Snake Eyes.
Yep.
Are those guys worth anything? Like the 80s more cast iron kind of guys?
Yeah, they're not obviously as worth as much as the 70s guys, but they're all right. They're not as high,
man,
though.
Man, there's some good stuff. I got to find all those guys.
Yeah, you do.
Not for making any money, just to play with them.
Yeah. And
set up a fortress.
Right. Show your son.
I show my son, and then I'd be like, you got to go, because I'm going to do this myself.
Quick story. When I'm selling, I have the vintage stuff, and it's great to see guys come up with their kids and say, here's like a reel-to-reel player. This is what we had to actually play. Or a 45 record they're showing their kids. And to us, it's like no big deal. But they're like, hey, our playlist used to consist of a stack of 45s on a record. Right, that was our playlist, you know?
All right. I got a question for you. This is 630.
Okay.
And I know they're probably being facetious, but this is a thing. So we're all adults. what about the Little Mermaid VHS with the
phallic symbol?
Phallic symbol shaped castle towers in the background.
Yeah,
that sort of was a thing. Where
that
like,
was a thing, and they changed the artwork because the towers in the background did look like a phallic symbol. And apparently,
if you have the original, is that worth anything more?
You know, I find them, and I stop picking them up because I see them so much that I stop buying them because they're only worth like $10. You know, so I don't really buy them anymore.
Okay. All right, let's keep going. I want to get to some of these concert T-shirts.
Yeah.
There's a good stuff coming in. Blue Oyster Cult.
Yeah.
Bought it at Poplar Creek for $7, 1982.
You know, that was my favorite venue. It was just the best venue.
I was able to see a show there. I remember I saw Smithereens.
Mm-hmm.
They were the headliner with the Lemonheads. Lemonheads were opening for him.
Yeah, my favorite show there, I think, was Midnight Oil. He was just crazy, climbing all over everything and... saw Till Tuesday there probably three times open up
Look
for everybody.
Look at you, huh?
She oddly
dropping
opened,
a little Amy Mann up in the house.
Oh, I'm like with Nick with that. I adore her. And but yeah, she opened for Tom Petty there, I think, on the Southern Accents tour. But yeah, it was just the best venue. It's the sight lines, the audio, and, you know, just the quality was really cool there versus the other one.
224 says they have a baseball style Survivor Eye of the Tiger
baseball
tour T-shirt.
Okay. Oh, yeah, baseball. Deal. When they say baseball style, yeah, it like means the three quarters. Jersey. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that is. It's, you know, it's, obviously I could look those up during the break, but yes, some of those are 150, you know, 200.
$200.
Yeah, I mean, and some are even higher. I mean, if you get a Zeppelin or a Pink Floyd from the 70s, it could be 300, jeez, you know, 400.
It's keeping Jim Peterik in purple pants for the next 20 years.
Oh, yeah. The song alone is keeping him in the...
I was a concert junkie, 708 says this, through the 80s and 90s. And the irony is the bigger artists like Paul McCartney or Bruce Springsteen concert tees would fade and shrink.
Mm.
Where the smaller artists like Material Issue, Dinosaur Jr., Soundgarden, their t-shirts maintain the shape and coloring. You can still wear them today.
Right. It's all, and some artists actually will sign off on what brand is used for their t-shirts. Right. I mean, like,
that one's for the show, that one's for Rose.
Yeah,
Records.
I mean, I know, right. I'm meeting some people, like Rolling Stones, they don't care, you know, but like U2, like Larry Mullen, the drummer, is like, he's the guy, like, he has to sign off on all their merch stuff. He's just, like, way into it. So each band, I guess, right, kind of makes it a priority if they want.
All right, let's go back to the diecast cars. Let's go to Rich. Rich, what do you got? What do you want to brag about, Rich?
Yeah, I've got, well, more than one, but I've got two. They're Alan Kowicki. He was the 92 NASCAR champion, but I've got a car from the 90 of his in 1/18 scale from the 91 Daytona 500 that's the Army car. And I've also got, he was sponsored by Hooters, so I've got a Hooters car that is the adult Hooters, which means the owl has eyeballs, you know, on his eyeballs. He has pupils that are pink.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Good.
What was the driver's name again? I was looking up the scale, the car, and everything.
Alan Kowicki.
Okay.
Well, by the way, that name for a driver is probably the best. I mean, you get the wall trips and the petties.
Right.
But you get a Kowicki. Is it Kowicki?
Yeah, I'm not finding his.
But I like the name alone. Right. I think it's worth it. All right, we'll look it up. We'll see what we can find, Rich.
Kowicki, I think.
You don't know that from all the merch, the Kowicki merch from right, over the years? All right, thanks, Rich.
No problem. Thank you.
We'll look that up. 312-981-7200. What we're going to do is we're going to take a break and an update with Rob on the news and come back for the second half of the swap meet. So if you're on the line or you text in, we'll get to it. 630's got the Allman Brothers Band Summer Tour, 2005. Okay. And then they say too soon. Isn't the guy from the Allman Brothers died last week?
Yeah, just
right?
Last week, yeah.
It's the Allman Brothers Band Summer Tour, and the picture, he sends a picture, and it's a flying, it's like a, you know, a drawing, but it's a peach that's flying. Original emoji.
Right.
OG emoji right there. There you go. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us.
It's time for swap meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Or it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam.
That's me.
That's right. It's a Swap Meet at DuPage Picker on Facebook and Twitter. We are evaluating your memorabilia, your collectibles, what you got up in the attic, what may be down in the basement. Or if you're lucky, hanging in the hallway between the kitchen and the living room. That's my favorite, is people are like, look what I've got that I'm actually using. I'm using to decorate my house, and it's worth money.
You know, I tend to find a lot of stuff like that junk drawer people have, you know, in their kitchen. I find some really cool stuff in there, whether it's a souvenir or a matchbook that's worth something or a magnet, you know. So that's kind of a spot
there
I check.
Go.
I'm giving away.
And you know, I always like when there are items that have Chicago significance. That's a big thing for me.
Like, right.
The idea that someone, you know, if you possibly had, you know, Richie Daly's, you know, cowboy hat, his Indiana Jones hat, his leather hat, then I'd be like, that's the best thing of all time.
There's a sale this weekend I saw in estatesales.net that actually has a bust of the first Richard Daly.
What?
For sale at it. Yeah, that's kind of
what are
cool.
They asking? Do you know?
I don't know because it starts Friday, I think.
Oh, man, I might have to go out to that. I want
to
see that.
Yeah, so I'm going
to
check that out.
I don't think my wife would have any problem with me bringing home a Richard J. Daley right, bust. You know. To put right next to the microwave, right next to the coffee maker.
I put it in by the front door, put your hat on it or hang your coat on it or something.
Just to scare everybody. He's back.
Yep.
312, I have the 1933 official program of the Century of Progress.
Yep.
Wow. They want to know what it's worth, but they also want to know where they think they can take these items.
You know, oddly enough, two have recently sold, and it was only $8 a piece. Oh. And I would think that should be a little higher. I know.
I know. At least, one, two, three, four. At least a dollar a year. Lot. That's old. Yeah. That's a dollar a year.
You would think.
All right, let's keep going here. Let's go to Joe. Joe, what do you want to brag about, Joe?
My wife used to work for the Santa Fe Railroad as a courier nurse, and this is back in the 60s and early 70s. And the Santa Fe Railroad provided the railroad for Disneyland. She has a book of tickets that were given to kids on the train to go to Disneyland and ride the train and ride the ride. It's complete.
Wow. That's that could be more than what some of these have gone for. I've seen some as high as $360. And I think if you have a complete untouched set or a booklet of any kind, it could be more than that.
Wow. There you go. See?
Now, also, she's got her complete uniform and the script from the railroad and her bags.
So all that is basically just Santa Fe, or is there some Disney tied in with that as well?
No, it's all the uniform and bags are all ATSF Santa Fe.
Okay, I mean that's still worth money because people collect Santa Fe and all the different railroad.
What about when you say company. Script? What do you mean script? Like, hi, welcome to the train, that kind of stuff.
What it was that at certain points during the trip from Chicago to Los Angeles or from Chicago to San Francisco, she would get on and give a documentary about the scenery that they were going through,
Okay.
Through the Red Cliffs or Raton Pass.
If you look out the right.
Right.
That kind of thing, right?
Keep your hands inside the right.
Scripted. That's awesome. Mike, I love it, man. Or that's Joe, I love it. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay.
Some of my favorite stuff right there. Mike is next. Mike, what do you got, Mike?
Yeah, I got three autographed cards from Ernie Banks.
Okay.
One is from 1999. And one is from 99, and the third is from 96. Okay. Canadian Club Classic Certificate of Authenticity cards.
Okay.
They've all been signed in front of these people. They also have two by Andre Dawson. One is from the year 2000.
Hawk.
And then one, he's got a picture of him. It looks like he's in the eighth grade on the front of it.
Dawson?
Yes. And
nice.
It says here that the attached autograph is an official autograph personally signed by Andre Dawson.
Wow.
The autograph was obtained and is guaranteed by Panini America, Inc.
Wow. That's great, Mike.
Yeah, 141 out of 250.
You've got all the info. I mean, you're calling in to brag. It's not like you're asking what you need to get from it. You know what you got.
Obviously, I don't have the exact card you might be thinking of, but just to give you an idea, like Ernie Banks, what they call COA and PSA authenticated, as high as a 900, and Andre Dawson's just below that at like 800. That's the highest. So it could, it all depends if you got it graded and all that.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. You're welcome. Have a good night.
Thanks. Tim Raines is going to be on the show coming up, and I'm reading his book. I just read he's got a memoir.
Okay. All these sports people are becoming authors.
Yeah. But this is great because it's all about his life and all sorts of stuff, from the drug stuff to playing baseball. But Andre Dawson's a big part of it because he played with him in Montreal.
Yeah.
And they talks about in the book, I just read it today, that Dawson essentially left the Expos. And this is a famed story that Chicagoans know, that he so desperately wanted to play somewhere else that he called Dallas Green. And he said to Dallas Green, this is 87.
Okay.
He said, you know what? Blank contract. You tell me how much money you want to pay me, but I want to play in Chicago.
Wow.
And they paid him, I think it was a half a mil, 500 grand to get Andre Dawson to come to Chicago. If you remember, last place team, MVP that year. So he got 500 grand plus incentives. I don't know what the incentives were, but a huge move for Andre Dawson, and probably, if you think about it, put Andre Dawson in the Hall of Fame from his days in Chicago, because that's when he became a star for the league.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a star before that, but he was playing in a Canadian city. Yeah. That. But anyway, interesting, huh?
It is.
You can find that. That big table will be later.
All right. I'll
talk about that one later. All right. Keep going here. Let's keep going. 773 says, I have a lime green 1967 Girls Schwinn Breeze. I'm assuming that's a bike.
Yes, it is. And
lime green.
The highest I've seen them sell is about $200, but more realistically, $100.
Well, isn't that what you're going to pay for it now? If you go like to the Kmart and you wanted to get a lime green bike, it'd be $100, $200.
Yeah, but just people are into the old bikes.
That's not
you watch American Pickers.
Be,
that's all it is.
It's $500,000. 224 says 1972 Evel Knievel poster with ticket stubs.
Yeah, I couldn't find the poster. The stubs are going for about $30 to $50 just for a stub. And I had one for the closed circuit viewing at Hillside Theater for his Snake River Canyon jump. And I think I sold mine for about $32.
Wow.
But yeah, the posters,
did
I have to
it?
Say, no, he crashed in that one.
Did he die?
No.
No, different one.
No, I think
I think you might be finding out. I don't know much about Evel Knievel.
Yeah, he passed away, but I think
did
lung,
he pass
lung
away?
Cancer.
Oh, his cancer got him?
Yeah, and he broke like every bone in his body with all these
that
jumps
dude
and
do
lung
the
cancer.
Crazy ass stuff and cancer. Oh, man, life.
Yep.
Life.
Yep.
All right, 312-981-7200. 312 says, I have a Vectrex video game system, not in mint condition. What do you think?
Okay, it depends how many games and accessories he has with it. If he has like a lot of the games and everything, it could be as high as $700 to $900.
Wow.
The individual games are going for about $15 to $20 by themselves. When I say games, that's the cartridges. The system can be about $200 to $225 without any games.
There you go. All right, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll get to all the texts and calls that are coming in here before the end of the hour. Swap Meet, Greg Flamps here. Stay with us. It's a Swap Meet here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is just in. The Golden State Warriors beat the Cavaliers. Dramatic fashion. The Cavaliers were up with 2 minutes to play, 6 points or so. And Kevin Durant, wow. Steph Curry, they just like that. 30 seconds. They end up winning by five. They outscored him. I think they outscored him like 11-0 at the end. Kevin Durant, like ice cold, just hitting threes.
Yep.
This is an amazing time for the Golden State Warriors. Not as amazing as the Chicago Bulls of the 90s, but that's, I digress. 312-981-7200. 815, Joe and McHenry. He's got a 1993 Bulls champion t-shirt. Never worn with all the stickers on it. What's it worth?
I'd say about $80.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's pretty
good. Could be
good.
More, but.
He sent a picture. It's a gray one with the, I mean, he's probably paid
$14
for it, so that's not bad.
Yeah.
847 says, we got a 1985 Black and Blue Brothers poster, the Bears. Got any value? That's my favorite poster of all time.
Yeah, it's about $20 to $30.
Are they all, is it the offensive line that's all dressed like Jake and Elwood kind of thing?
Yeah, they have their uniforms on with the hats on, you know, and the sunglasses. Yeah.
I want to bring those back, right?
I could bring in a whole set if you want. I have like, I pick them up all the time.
Do you not think that's the best thing that's ever happened?
Yep.
I, sports lover or not,
yep.
The idea that the 85, a team would do like cat calendars, dress up, they do dress up. They had the Miami Vice, the one with Peyton and McMahon.
Right, Peyton and McMahon.
They had the just the
they
idea.
They had the locker
think,
one. They had one
it.
Called Second to None. It was all the second stringers.
I love it.
I mean, they had their own poster, the second
they
stringers.
They need to do more of that. They right. need to this. If you want to get back into the good graces of Chicago Bears fans' hearts, I want to see the Nanny McPhee poster, Pernell McPhee's poster.
Okay.
You got to help me do this, Greg. It's the best poster. He's holding up a bunch. He's got an apron on. He's vacuuming.
Okay.
And he's got his jersey underneath, and he's holding up like a two-year-old in a...
And,
Denver Broncos jersey with
oh, okay.
a, he's like he's a nanny.
Nice.
Because he's just, you know, he's
I gotta look just, for that one.
He's just babysitting these guys. He's so good. Anyway.
Awesome.
All right, here
no,
we go.
No, but all that Bear stuff, 85, 86, 87 in that era, it always sells. And what's weird is it's out of state bars and people that
oh
are buying
God,
that stuff.
It's the coolest stuff ever.
Yeah, I would think like it'd be local, but I guess we all have it here already. So
I hope somebody's making money off of that.
Yep.
Not just the people who are buying and selling, but someone gets some sort of credit for that stuff. Great. Some ad man somewhere is like, what if we dressed them up like the Blues Brothers?
Right.
224 says a 1970 Grant's Department Store Hot Canary Banana Bicycle.
Yeah, could not find that.
I could see what I can. Pitch is a great description of that.
He did.
Banana seat.
Yeah.
All right, we'll keep going.
Yep.
815 says, I've got the Ario Speedwagon. Wheels are touring. 84, 85.
That was about $70, yeah.
Oh, I got a Max Headroom Catch the Wave Coca-Cola t-shirt.
Couldn't find that one yet, but I'm sure it's in the $40 range is what I'm thinking.
815 says, I have every publication of the National Weekly Sports Magazine put out by the late Frank DeFord.
Yeah, could not find that.
It's interesting. It says, can you also expand on the value of the artist and the publisher that has passed away?
Yeah, DeFord.
Well, Frank DeFord was great. Great sports caster, but I don't know if I'd expand on the value of the art. All right, keep on going here. We've got the 331 says they got the Day in the Park t-shirt. Old Comiskey, late 70s, featuring Journey, Santana, Molly Hatchet.
That's a $150 shirt all day.
Oh, give me a break. Yep. $150 for that one?
Yep, easily. And the condition sometimes doesn't even matter. I mean, I've seen people buy Zeppelin shirts with holes in it for $150.
Oh, yeah. So. I got plenty of shirts with holes in it. So right. I got some money for that.
Yep.
Let's do Joan. Joan, what do you got? What do you want to brag about, Joan?
Hello, Harley Davidson event, Bruce Springsteen ticket wasn't used. It was in the early 2000s.
The ticket wasn't
in Milwaukee,
used?
Wisconsin.
It wasn't used? Pardon? The ticket wasn't used?
It wasn't used. It's a whole ticket.
What happened? You just didn't go to the show?
Somebody gave it to me, and then I had to go to work, and I couldn't get out of work.
Come on.
And it was so sad, I couldn't do it.
Joan, you couldn't get out of work because no one would cover for you? You're like, I'm going to go see Springsteen. They're like, nah, I can't work your shift.
Yeah,
come on, man. You got to start incentivizing.
Does it have any value?
I'm saying $25 maybe. Yeah. Unused ticket still.
I don't even know what it costs to begin with, but okay, $25.
Yeah, probably it was more than that.
I'll tell you that. All right, thanks, Joan.
Thank you. Bye.
I'm just annoyed at Joan's friends and coworkers. I can go to Springsteen. I wish I could help Joan, but I really can't change my shift.
They block that.
That's bogus.
Mm-hmm.
Joan, I know this was years ago, but I'm mad for you.
Yep.
How much do you think Set 630 wants to know? The Funko Pop vinyl figures? I see these all the time at the
Comic Cons. There's hundreds of them.
10
yeah.
to 15 bucks a piece, but some, if they're considered the Holy Grail, go up to about $400.
And some are even higher than that. I had the Freddy Krueger one has sold close to $2,000 for that one. And I'm saying hold on to those because I think 10 years, 20 years is going to go up.
Wow.
I mean, some, like you said, are as low as $7 and some
I see
are
those,
2000.
Like, just on walls of
yeah,
those
there's, like, walls
at Comic-Con,
of them.
Right?
Yeah, Comic-Con or any of the flea markets, you can find them.
708, Joy, who calls in all the time, Joy, has a set of Pink Floyd beer glasses, record cover okay. beer glasses. They're like pint glasses with the words Pink Floyd on them.
Yeah, I think they're still making those, so I would say $25 maybe. Mm.
Okay. All right, what else do I have here? I've got Paul on the line. Paul, what do you want to brag about, Paul?
Well, I got a hand-carved wood duck, a decoy, and it's 150 years old or so. It's just beautiful, and it works.
Yeah,
close like a duck.
Yeah, duck decoys are.
What do you mean
huge.
It works?
I mean, some of them are top heavy. You know, this one you swear it's a real duck.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's so many different variances, but they are very collectible. People buy them; they just have no problem selling those. If you want to send a picture to the Facebook page, I can fine-tune that for you.
At Two Page Picker.
Yeah, but they're definitely they're a hot item right now. Same with the typewriters. I don't know if we talked about that. Typewriters are getting hotter now, too.
I love your show. You guys are doing a good job.
Thanks,
Thank
Paul.
You so
Thank
much.
You for calling in. Some fun stuff coming in. Toys from unopened bags from McDonald's from the movie Babe.
Okay.
So random. Joy's got a poster of Mike Ditka, or not a poster, a puzzle. A puzzle of Mike Ditka.
Oh, Ditka, yeah.
There's a puzzle with him just, and when it's done, it's just him on the sideline looking exasperated.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the Ditka stuff is no problem selling. I have a puzzle too, but it's not of Ditka. It's from that era, but it's just the whole team, different shots, but yeah.
And 224, we'll end it here, has an unopened and excellent condition cereal boxes of Walter Payton and Michael Jordan Wheaties.
Yeah, again, those are really, they're signed, they're really about $20, you know.
Well, should we start holding on to our Rossies and our Zobristsies and our
it's not a bad
Rizzo-Z's?
Idea to toss a one in the box somewhere, but The other one that we didn't get to, the 45 carrying case of the Beatles,
that was
a big one. That was like $290 for that.
Oh,
yeah, so that was
the
good.
Mint condition, all the autograph stuff, too.
Yeah, that was a good one.
All right. Well, I missed a couple. There's probably about 5 or 10 more. We can do it next week. I get the concept. The sports has ended, and you've also been, you may get your memory jogged a little bit, but, you know, get in a little earlier in the swap meet, and we'll make sure we get all these.
Yeah.
Cause I'm getting a lot of these that are coming in right now at the end. The lines light up, and I'm like, we're done.
Yeah.
Greg Flamm, as always, Wednesday night here at 10 o'clock at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. Greg, great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it tonight for the download. Patty Vasquez coming up next. Joy, I want that puzzle. I want that Ditka puzzle. That was good. The puzzle that was sent in, essentially, of an exasperated Coach Ditka. Like, it wasn't even any famous shot. It was just him mad. It was a third down, an incomplete pass from Tomczak. Come on, Tomczak!
Which was his usual face when Tomczak was...
And it's a puzzle. I love it. It's like, where's it from? Like, the... Chicagoland meat,
Meat Marketing Hall of Fame.
The Meat Marketing Hall of Fame. Come on, Tomczak. Why are you throwing a double coverage? That's what I call that puzzle. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio. We're back tomorrow night. That was a quick four. It's a fast four, as we say. Tomorrow night, Cory Doctorow is going to be here. He is a famed Boing Boing writer. Happy to talk with him. He's got his debut novel. Also, we'll have much, much more on the program. I'm excited. Tomorrow's going to be a good show, too. All right. We're going to be doing, Ted McClellan's going to be here, and we're going to be doing the Midwest accent show that I promised a couple of months ago. He came in with his book, How to Talk Midwestern.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
All
and,
right.
And I said, it wouldn't be fun call in and text show if people would try to call in and you have to guess the accent. The Midwest accent, because WGN's a perfect place for that because we have such regional, you know, coverage. And the same with the words that you use and the phrases you use or your family uses that are out of the ordinary and see if Ted can figure them out. So that's coming up. Yeah, there it is. See, that's coming up tomorrow night on the download.